Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks all over the country on Saturday, December 2nd, 2017. This is episode 1444. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Time to talk tech. Yes, indeedy. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. That means we're going to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and all that jazz. Let's see, the phone number you need to call is 8888-ASK-LEO. 8888-ASK-LEO, that translates to 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Let me just log in here to my computer so I can see the rest of this. Oh, yes, if you're not in that area. No, I have it memorized now. If you're not in that area, you can call using Skype out, and that'll get it to us for free. It should, because it's a toll-free number. Website is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. And let's see, what is new in the tech world? You know, I guess as we get closer to the holiday season, we're now in December. Wow, what happened? We're now in December. The tech community, I think, just kind of slows down and stops creating new stuff so you can buy the existing stuff. So there's a little slowdown. And you know, one of the things that's happening right now is the pundits who have been, you know, the tech reviewers who have been racing to review these phones the day they get them, which really is somewhat silly because you can't tell if a phone's good the day you get it, are finally kind of sitting back. Now they've had a few weeks with the new iPhone X and the new Pixel 2 XL and the new LG V30 and the new and on and on and on. And they're finally kind of sitting back and giving you what I think is the real skinny, you know. Oh, it was so cool when we first got it, but now maybe we should sit back and think about it. I think it's also fair at this point to start looking at what's something I do, and it's silly, but I do it anyway, the phone of the year. I like to pick each year the most exciting, most interesting phone, not necessarily the phone you should buy, because after all, your needs, all of our needs are different. I started this back when the Moto X came out. What was that, 2013? Because I felt like that was such an important breakthrough phone. In hindsight, maybe not. But at the time, it felt like really an important phone and one that didn't get as much attention maybe as it deserved. And I was just very excited about what Motorola was doing with that. This year, it's a tough one to pick the best phone of the year. You've got the obvious choices, the Samsung Galaxy Note 8, the iPhone 10. I'm going to not even include the iPhone 8 in there, right? Because the 10 supersedes it. It almost feels like the iPhone 8 was from an earlier time, a more innocent time, a time when we had big bezels and fingerprint readers and we were happy. We didn't know any better. But now we have the iPhone 10 and, well, it's a brave new world. You'd also have to put the new Google phone in there, the Pixel 2 and the Pixel 2 XL. This is a tough one. I think without a doubt, in my mind, the iPhone 10 is the phone of the year. For so many reasons. It's such an interesting phone. It's not 100% perfect. In fact, I'm wondering if all the people who are raving about Face ID, you know, the face recognition that replaced the fingerprint recognition in the previous generations, the people who are raving about it, maybe now that they've had a week or two or three with it, are stepping back a little bit and saying, what are they saying? Well, I'll tell you what I said from day one, which is it's not as good as it ought to be. It's not perfect. You enter, I find myself at least daily entering my PIN instead of the Face ID. I kind of miss fingerprint ID. Touch ID, which is what Apple calls it, worked every time, unless your hands were wet or wearing mittens or something. But it was pretty reliable and pretty fast. It just kind of felt consistent. Face ID feels like, well, it almost feels like it's the whim of the phone. Yeah, maybe it'll work this time. Maybe not. And when it works, it works. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. You pick up the phone and you swipe up, and it simultaneously unlocks the phone and takes you home. But I still think Apple is making lemonade out of lemons. I think that in order to make a screen that goes all the way to the edge, they had to take out the Touch ID. I'm sure they wanted to do the Touch ID. They deny this, but I'm sure that they wanted to do it in some other way, perhaps through the screen or on the back or something, and then decided. And that's how others have, by the way, solved this. Some phones have a fingerprint reader on the back. Google does that in a very handy place, I think, unless the phone's, in a stand or on the desk. Then it's not so handy. But nothing's handy. You still have to pick up the iPhone in a situation like that, too. I feel like the Apple, they say, oh, no. As soon as we realized Face ID would work so well. This sounds a little bit like ad copy. As soon as we realized how wonderful Face ID was going to be, we decided, no, we'll get rid. Who needs fingerprint reading? I'm not sure I fully agree with that. But we're going to live with it because I think this is the wave of the future. And, it does work well. It's not that it doesn't work well. It's just not perfect. It works better than one would expect, certainly better than any other Face ID, including Windows Hello. Microsoft's a couple of years ago, with the release of Windows 10, put in something they call Hello. Not a good name. Well, maybe it is. Hello. And on computers, you need a special camera, just as you do on the iPhone, a camera that can do depth sensing as well as see a picture. Because it has to, you don't want it just to be a picture of somebody to unlock it. You want it to look like something round, in my case, kind of like a pumpkin, so that there's a real person there. And Windows Hello, it works pretty well, but, you have to position your head just so, and if the screen's angled, you might have to tilt it a little bit. But it's nice. It's cool because it works. Again, though, I have fingerprint reading on some of my Windows 10 computers, and I think I prefer that. It's like a concrete thing. You're actually unlocking the machine by touching the fingerprint reader, and it just seems to work, and it's kind of know what's happening. Face ID, it's like, did it see me? It's maybe a little too magical. Perhaps that's it. Nevertheless, iPhone 10, clearly the phone of the year. Somebody asked me, I guess Marques Brownlee, who's a podcaster, is giving away, what is he? He's giving away 15 iPhone 10s and 15 Note 8s. And somebody who was very confident thought, he's a YouTube reviewer guy. And somebody who's very confident thought she was going to win. No doubt about it, I'm going to win. But what should I pick? The Note 8 or the iPhone 10? It's an interesting question. If you need a stylus, you're going to go with the Note 8, right? If you want a pointing device or handwriting device. If you want the biggest difference immediately that I see on the Note 8 is the size. It's so much bigger than the iPhone 10. And the iPhone 10 feels like a little jewel in the hand. It's so beautifully made and so crafted and fits so well. I feel like if you had a choice and it didn't matter that the stylus was there, you don't care about the screen size, you don't care about fingerprint versus Face ID. And by the way, Samsung's fingerprint reader is terribly positioned, doesn't work nearly as well as Google's and others. But that, the Note 8 is amazing. It's a really amazing, beautiful phone. It has arguably a better camera than the iPhone 10, although I think they're so close that I don't think the differences are important. iPhone 10 has a wonderful camera too. I just think the iPhone 10 is kind of a work of art. It's beautiful. It's also, I should point out, like $150 more than the Note 8. But you get it for free, right? And I feel bad because I think the Google phone, the Pixel 2 and the Pixel 2 XL particularly, got such a bad rap from early reviewers about the screen and so forth. And having used this now for a few weeks, I think this is an excellent phone. If you're an Android fan, I almost think you should go with the Pixel 2 XL. It doesn't have the stylus. It doesn't have quite as good a screen, but it does, I would say, have the best camera out there. See, it's hard to pick a winner this year. Hard to pick a winner. I'm going to go with the iPhone 10 as the phone of the year this year. 8888 Ask Leo. Hey, let's take some calls. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. When you call that number, you will be talking to the wonderful Kim Schaffer. Hello, Kim.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Saturday or whatever day today
is. Happy Saturday.
Not really sure.
Happy Saturday. Happy day.
Happy day. Happy day to be back.
Yes.
Welcome back from New York.
I took a 2-day vacation in New York.
I don't know how you do that. I was thinking about that this morning. A flight from here to LA or Vegas, fine in a couple days, but I can't actually imagine going back and forth to New York in a couple of days.
Well,
it seems like too much time on a plane.
Yeah. I mean, I would have liked to spend more time. It was fun. We went to 2 Broadway shows, and that's kind of what we do. We like to go back there. Saw something really neat in New York that I hope does well. It's in Times Square. It's called Gulliver's Gate. They went out and they got miniature artists all over the world to make miniatures of their country. So it's kind of like a World's Fair. They have a beautiful miniature of Manhattan.
Oh, cool.
And you could see kind of under there's Grand Central Station, and it's maybe, I don't know, 3 feet by 4 feet with lots of tiny little people in it. And then underneath it, you can see the trains. So they show the underground as the trains are under there. And the trains, it's like a giant train, you know, if you like trains, it'd be like a giant train display. But then there's Russia. They had it done in St. Petersburg, and there's all this snow. And then you get a little key when you go to it, and you put the key in at various places and turn it, and things happen. Like there was a bullfight, there was a turn the tables bullfight. The bull was the matador, and they're all little miniature things. They had a little, made me think of this because they have the London one, they have a stage, maybe it's Wembley Stadium stage, and you turn the key and you can see the Beatles, or you can see the Who, or you can see different concerts, Queen.
Did they have little mini pubs?
I'm sure they did, with little tiny miniature beers, probably. So that was really cool, and I feel like they probably spent millions of dollars making this thing. It's a city block in size.
Oh, that's cool.
Down in Times Square, and it's worth seeing if you go to New York City, Gulliver's Gate. I don't know if it just opened a couple of months ago. I don't know if anybody knows about it, but I really liked it. Gulliversgate.com if you want to know more.
I'm also glad that the caller that called me last week was wrong, and Bette Midler was in the performance.
Oh, somebody was just giving me a hard time. Yeah, we went to see Hello, Dolly, a revival of that old chestnut of a show from the 60s.
Uh-huh.
But Bette Midler was in it. I wanted to see Bette Midler.
Was it great?
She was amazing.
Awesome.
Oh, my goodness. And I don't know how, but we got front row seats. So
yeah, I saw that picture.
Yeah.
That looks close.
So we were, well, the only thing I felt bad about is, you know, sometimes actors, because they're really projecting.
Yeah.
And then the lights are shining on them, so you can see they're spitting, basically,
yes.
on
so
you.
So did you get Bette Midler spit all
no,
over
No, I
you?
Didn't. I would have welcomed Bette Midler spit. But Lisa, my wife, was sitting next to me, and I feel bad because there's a singer right in front of us, and he's spitting on us. I hope he didn't see. Lisa was cowering in her seat with her arm over her face, thinking, I don't want your spit.
You need the capes that they give to people during the Gallagher
show. It's like a Gallagher show. Yeah. It's like a Gallagher. It was so wonderful to see that. That was a great show.
We had
a lot of time. We saw, of course, Steve Martin's opening night. That was a thrill. To his new show, Meteor Shower, which just opened with Amy Schumer and Keegan-Michael Key.
Hadn't even heard of that one.
Yeah, Laurie Benanti. It was a wonderful show. That was very funny. So we had a good time. I don't know.
You packed a lot of stuff in a couple
I'm a theater guy. Yeah, that's not even all of it. There was a lot more. Yeah. Anyway, I had some fun. So, but I'm back. I'm here. That's a two-day vacation. That means I'm rested and ready to go. Who should I talk to first here?
John in Scottsdale bought a Galaxy S7, and it sounds like the pictures are not turning out quite the way he expected.
Oh, they should be quite good with it.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Well, let's find out. Hi, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Kim.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Long-time listener, second-time caller.
Nice.
Called you about 8 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, and surprisingly enough, it's This issue is somewhat related to the other issue. The other was just I asked you a question whether you use a .com or .org.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Sure.
A charity thing I wanted to do.
Yeah. Did you get the .org?
I did. And so as time has gone on here, because I assumed I was going to do my charity hike 8 years ago.
Oh, I remember. Yeah.
I've been, it's, let's put it this way. I'm hoping it'll happen in 2019.
Wow.
So I wake up every day thinking about
good
it.
Good job.
Go to bed every day thinking about it.
I've been following this with interest. Yeah. Cause I know that you really wanted to do this and you couldn't, but, good luck. Good luck.
So anyhow, I bought this Galaxy S7 specifically for videotaping on the charity hike.
Nice.
So I could, at the end of the week, send the clips and some pictures to the kids at the hospital so they could follow me.
Neat.
And so I picked it up and I did a couple little test hikes. I live out here in Arizona now. And when I'm familiar with photography, marginally familiar with video photography. So, I know about f-stops, panning, you know, fill flash, all that stuff. So I'm hiking along on the side of a mountain, and I take a pic take a video. And at this point, I'm not hiking, so this is what really kind of drives me crazy. So I'm panning, and I have, let's say, the lower half of the picture is the mountain, and the upper half is the sky.
Yeah.
And when I slow. Even when I do a super slow pan, you know, like a correct pan,
yeah,
the sky looks like it's lighting up. It's just completely pixelated, like a checkerboard.
Hmm.
And it's just not acceptable.
Sounds like it's over compressing. You've looked at the settings in the camera app that you're using to shoot your video, and you've played with different settings.
Yeah, I shot it in the regular camera, on the regular camera app that comes with the Samsung. And then I also have been using Open Camera,
okay,
which I really like a lot.
Okay.
And it's
same thing?
Same thing.
Okay.
Same thing. And playing it directly back on the camera.
It is, you know, that's it sounds like a compression artifact. It may be something that just the hardware is incapable of doing better. But I think you're right to see if there are other applications that do a better job of it. You know, the application, the camera app that you're using, is what decides how much compression to put in there. What it sounds like you're seeing is something we call macro blocking. And you'll see it on any solid color. Sky is a very good example, or a solid black if you see nighttime. And you might even see it if you're watching streaming movies when it's very dark or the sky is very solid color blue. And you look at it, it's not a smooth color. You've probably seen this. You can actually see banding or blocking. And what that is called macro blocking. It's an artifact of the compression. Now, every video has to be compressed. Because video itself is just too big to be moved around, stored, edited, especially on a phone. But it may be that it's over-compressing it. If you can't find settings, you know, try a different frame rate, slower frame rate, try a lower resolution. Look at it. There's an app I really like called Cinema FV5. It's not free, but it is a much higher quality video camera application dedicated to video. See if that makes it any better. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, it's hard to say, John, whether it's just pictures don't look, stills don't look that way, right?
No, they don't.
Yeah. Only video.
The stills are perfect. I love the quality. However, one thing I'm also having an issue with that's driving me nuts is the fill flash is terrible. When I go out hiking or running out in the desert, sometimes I'll come across hikers and I'll see a good picture. I'll say, hey, this is a great picture. Can I take your picture? And sometimes they'll have...
and backlight or whatever, and you want a flash. Yeah. You know, the S7 had an excellent camera, but it isn't anywhere near as good as the more modern cameras, you know, the S8 Plus, the Note 8, or the Pixel 2. In fact, the Pixel 2 is probably the best for that kind of thing. Apple does a fairly good job with fill flash. One of the things those cameras have, and I can't remember if the S7 had it, I don't think it did, is it has multi-tone flash. Instead of just being a big white light, it can do a flash to match the background lighting. And those multi-tone flashes really do a much better job of fill. Fill is a hard thing to do. You know, fill flash means you don't want the flash to be, you're just trying to bring the face up to the same luminance level as the background. You don't want it to look like the guy's in it getting a flash picture. Because the flash picture is terrible. It's bright and flat and flattens everything. And that sounds like what you're getting.
Yeah, I was a photojournalism major, so I'm really...
Oh, you know better than... Yeah.
You know, all that stuff. And I was just very, very, very surprised. It would be great if somebody was able to come out with an app where you could actually...
That may be a limitation of the camera, you know. Yeah.
Any suggestion on if I just can't get one of the cameras to work
well? Can you get a point-and-shoot instead? Because I think you'd probably get a better result with almost any point-and-shoot.
That's what I'm saying. Any ideas there that you can throw my way?
Well, you're going to want it lightweight and slim, and the Canon ELPH cameras are quite good, very small.
I used to have one of those.
Yeah, very small form factor. And you can get them down in just a couple $100 price range. There are better, you know, and of course, the more you spend, the better the camera will be. You know, my favorite point-and-shoot is a Sony RX. Go ahead.
3,000 miles, so the better quality. You know,
It's kind of a balance, right? You don't want to spend a lot of money, but at the same time, this is a big deal. When do you think you're going to be able to do it?
Well, I'm hoping for 2019 because it's a Loma Linda Children's Medical Center. They're building a whole new hospital. And it's supposed to open in 2020. So
people forget how much preparation, how much work this is to do a cross-country trip like that on your bike.
Well, it's just life has gotten in the way.
I know.
Of other people.
I've been following you, John. I know. What's the website? Is it still up?
No, I don't have a website up. I never got a site up. That you might have been trying to follow someone else, but maybe when the time comes. Maybe I could come back on, or maybe Linda could contact you guys.
Yeah, and plug it. You bet.
I could call you from the trail at one point.
That would be so much fun. I would love that, John.
I would appreciate it, Leo.
Good. Good. Good luck to you. Thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care, John.
You're very welcome. I hope I can pull it off.
Okay, John. Thanks. That jazzy music tells us but one thing. It must be time for Scotty Wilkinson, home theater guru, and Tuba Christmas. We got to start right off the bat with Tuba Christmas. It's coming up tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Now, this is only Tuba Christmas Los Angeles.
They're so all over the country. Probably
they're all over
the
country and the world, actually. Yeah. There are 10 international cities with a Tuba Christmas concert. Basically what it is, everywhere in the city or in the area where they are, a call goes out. Any and all tuba players, come join us. Play Christmas carols. And it's a free concert, totally free to the audience. People come and the tubas play Christmas carols and the audience sings. And it's really a lot of fun. It's a great way to get into the holiday spirit. And what says holiday spirit more than 100 tubas on stage?
Scott is the director of the Los Angeles concert. And I know your wife, Joanne, sings in it as well. And it's just...
Yep.
Just really a neat event. So it's tomorrow where?
Tomorrow at 7 o'clock p.m. at the Hall of Liberty.
It's in a cemetery.
It's in a cemetery.
Somehow.
It's on the grounds of Forest Lawn Hollywood Hills, which is a famous cemetery. There are a lot of famous people buried
there. Forest Lawn's amazing. And the Hall of Liberty is a beautiful hall. Why not, you know?
Yeah. A lot of orchestras do their series at that hall.
Sure.
So, and Forest Lawn is very gracious in allowing us to use the hall. And it's a 1,200-seat auditorium, so no ticket required. Just show up. If you come early, we have a food truck there, Roni Macaroni. So come sing Christmas carols and listen to 100 tubas playing Christmas music. I'll be the guy up in front of the group with the big white stick.
It's one of these days I got to get down there and tubachristmasla.com.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Tubachristmasla.com okay. for my show. And if you don't live in Los Angeles, go to tubachristmas.com, click on Where is Tuba Christmas, and then from a drop-down menu, select the state you live in, and there'll be, you know, 5, 6, 7, 10 cities around the state that are producing a Tuba Christmas concert. Nice. Tuba players have quite a lot of camaraderie. They love playing together. It's not like trumpets or violins where everyone's competing for the first chair, right? Tuba players all play the same part, so we can all be chummy and together rather than competitive and I love
it. Sounds like fun. Hey, it's I finally saw on Blu-ray 4K
UHD Blu-ray.
UHD Blu-ray HDR Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk.
Ooh, did you watch it?
Yeah.
What did you think?
So this is the movie that I think Ang Lee was trying to make a statement, right? He shot it very high resolution at 120 frames per second.
120 frames per second, five times the number of frames that virtually all other movies are shot.
And
at.
I feel like he also he didn't put any makeup or very little makeup on the actors.
Virtually none. Yeah, that's correct.
They shot
it so clear.
Yeah, they shot it very close in many cases. Billy, and I think what Ang Lee was probably artistically trying to do is show the inner life of this soldier who's back from Iraq. Mm-hmm. And being honored by a Texas football team at halftime. But I think they were, you know, because he spent a lot of time on his face.
Yes.
But it was so vividly real.
Mm-hmm.
You're almost, doesn't look like a movie. It doesn't even look like a soap opera or a TV show. It looks like you're looking through a window.
Yes, exactly.
And
this is different than frame interpolation, where it does look like a soap opera.
It was
on a TV.
It was so real that I felt that made the acting feel bad and wooden.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, you're not alone in that opinion.
I think these are all very talented actors. So I know the acting wasn't bad and wooden, but I think that there's something happens in your brain. That makes it just feel like it's almost like a stage play, I guess would be the closest thing I could liken it to.
That's a very interesting point.
I don't think it worked, I guess is what I'm saying.
Okay, well, you're not alone. I will tell you that.
I love the movie, I know.
I did. I thought it worked very well, but a lot of people thought the same way that you did, that the acting wasn't very good or
whatever.
I don't
think the acting was bad. I think it was the way it was shot.
I thought Steve Martin was great.
He, you know, it's funny, of all the actors, he was, I thought, the best, the most natural. But Billy Lynn, I can't remember who played Billy Lynn, but Kristen Stewart was also in it. The other thing that's very disorienting is you're seeing these actors as they really look.
Yes.
And with every blemish and freckle, and it's funny to see, you know, movie stars you've seen before as if they're real. The whole thing, it's disconcerting to say the least.
It's very unusual, and it was an experiment on Ang Lee's part, and I applaud him for doing that because he's pushing the boundary of cinematic.
Are we going to see more movies like this? Is this the new?
Hard
to
say. Hard to say. I know James Cameron is big into high frame rate, and
this won't work for Avatar. This really will. I mean, I can't imagine because the whole Avatar is a fantasy.
It's true.
I could see artistically what Lee might have been trying to do is to make it real and make you put you inside of Billy Lynn's head.
Oh man! And what about those scenes in the Iraq desert?
Yeah, yeah,
very real, impactful, very real.
And
yeah.
I've seen, of course, my favorite 4K HDR is the BBC's Planet Earth, which they reshot.
Really great.
And so nature scenes, I think, play very well in that situation. You feel like you're there. You're on the Galapagos Islands or on the edge of a volcano. And so they work very well. But I'm wondering if drama maybe requires a little distance. We're certainly used to a distance.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. We're used to it. We have 100 years of 24 frames per second. And there's a little bit of blur. It's almost like looking through a
It makes you understand that movies are magic. When you're watching a movie, there's magical things happening. And when it's too realistic, it doesn't feel magical anymore. It feels like real people. You're looking at through a window. It looks like feels like real life. And I think even a very talented actor would be challenged in a situation like that to make the magic happen. And I think
this is why more filmmakers need to do this so that actors can get used to it. And it was just like when we went to high definition from standard.
But from the actor's point of view, and I wanted to ask Steve Martin about this. From an actor's point of view, was it any different than making a regular movie?
I would love to hear Steve Martin's response to that question.
Unless Ang Lee was giving them some sort of direction that was different. The only thing is you can tell Joe Alwyn, who's playing Billy Lynn, you can tell the camera must be inches from his face. It's a wide angle shot, and the camera must be right in his face, which must make that difference. That must be challenging.
The other technique that Ang Lee used that was very interesting was that when people were talking to Billy Lynn, they were looking directly into the camera.
That was also weird.
It's unusual.
Yeah, but I understand he was trying to do something. By the way, I only saw it at 60 frames per second because that's the most you can do with your DVD player and your TV. I don't know what it must have looked like in the theater if you were able to see it. I think very few theaters played it at 120. So.
Well, there were very few because the projectors needed to do that were very sophisticated and high-end. But I did see it, and it was amazing. I thought it was amazing.
Wow.
That's what I can tell
you. It's worth getting a 4K TV and a UHD Blu-ray player just to check it out. Scott, we're out of time. You'll find more of Scott Wilkinson here, of course, every weekend at avsforum.com, where he's editor, talking about home theater. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, back to the phones right after this. Tuba Timmy, who must be a friend of yours in the chat room, points out that in the early days of movies, remember that train movie that was coming out of the tunnel right at you?
That was one of the very first movies, and people ran screaming from the theater.
It's too realistic.
But they said the same thing about recorded music. You remember when there were some very early recordings of Enrico Caruso, and there were plenty of people, critics, you know, who said, it's as if he's in the room with you.
Right.
You know, which, of course, it wasn't. No. These are old, funky, old, scratchy Edison recordings.
Right. And these are, this movie didn't look like they were just more real than you're used to.
Than you're used to. Yeah. Exactly.
I've sat next to Steve Martin. I think it was more real than sitting next to him. I feel like they sharpened the movie beyond real life.
Well, I don't know if that's true. I don't know. I don't know if the answer to that, but I do know that they didn't wear any makeup. Ang Lee said you can't wear makeup at this level of clarity because you'll see it.
Yeah.
I do believe he gave I remember hearing something about he gave the director or the actors some direction about feeling more inside about what you're doing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Than you normally would.
Yeah. You wouldn't want to be too big.
You don't want to be too big.
Yeah. If you were too big, it would be very strange.
Yes.
So you'd have to be hyper-naturalistic in your acting. Yes. I don't know.
Internalize the emotions that you're feeling, and that would come out on the face. Boy, I think you're right. I hadn't thought of that before, but that camera probably was inches from Joe Alwyn's face.
In many cases, it was you could tell very, very close.
Yeah. But boy, the ambivalence.
I'll watch it again. I'll watch it again. I mean, I think it's a good movie, and I think that the content is good, but you're so
I do too.
Jarred by the technical details of it.
That a lot of people say this. You are absolutely not alone. A lot of people say that it took them out of the story.
Yeah. It's jarring. I might have to watch it a few times and then get used to it.
Part of the problem is there are almost no other examples, so you can't get used to it other than watching that movie
over and over again. Yeah.
You know, the Hobbit movies, at least I don't think they were released at 48 frames per second, but they were shot at 48 frames and played in some theaters at 48 frames per second. And people had the same complaints.
Yeah.
And that was several years ago. And there hasn't
Why
been
is this? Is it, It doesn't even, I mean, we've seen TV shows at 60 frames. It feels like it's more hyper real than that even.
Well,
I wonder if they were doing something to it.
It's a good question. It's a good question. I wish I had thought of that when it first came out, or even before it came out. I attended a screening with Ang Lee.
It'll be very interesting to hear about that. Yeah,
he had made some comments and took some questions, but I didn't think of that particular one. If I get a chance, I'll ask him.
Yeah, and I didn't get any time with Steve. I was hoping to ask him too because
you saw his play.
Yeah, we saw his play, and I didn't even get to say
hi.
There was such a crush around him, and so many celebrities, and I felt like a bump on a log. It's like I'm just some little guy from Petaluma here. So I was grateful to get to go, and it was fun. Then we saw Bette Midler in Hello, Dolly.
Oh, that must have been awesome.
And we were in the front row, so was more real than real as well. Yeah, that was amazing.
A little too real.
No, it was good. I didn't mind the spit. It was okay. Hey, can you hang around for the top of the hour?
Sure. Happy
okay.
To.
So please do. We're going to go back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Back to the calls we go. Phil in Concord, California. Hi, Phil.
Hey, hello.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I have some issues with Google Voice. I really love Google Voice, but I sometimes miss text messages. People try to text to there.
And yeah.
Also voicemail. I don't know where to look. And then Hangouts is sometimes used. So I'm kind of confused what to do with voicemail.
Yeah, and it's not your fault. It's really Google's fault in making a mess of this hash of what was a really, really good product. Google didn't invent it. They bought a company called Grand Central. I was a Grand Central user and then moved to Google Voice when Google acquired it. The primary function of it is voicemail. So if you go to voice.google.com, log into your account and go to voice.google.com, you'll see there are a number of tabs there, but you'll see your voicemails are all there. In fact, Voice also transcribes it. So you can read usually it's somewhat garbled, but at least get an idea of what the message would be about. They've gotten better, frankly, in the transcription, so that's kind of impressive. Hangouts is messaging one of, it seems, a dozen messaging apps from Google. Hangouts is their messaging app that ties with Google Voice. So if you send a text message from a Google Voice number, you'll need to use Hangouts to do that. And so, that's kind of the relationship between the two. You can also use Hangouts to place a call, but I don't think that's a Google Voice call. It's very confusing. So the text messaging, SMS, what we call SMS messaging, is handled by Hangouts. The voicemail should be there inside your Google Voice. There should be the Google Voice looks like a email inbox. You've got an inbox, and you've got voicemails, and you've got texts. And the idea of Voice was it's free, which is about the right price for it, given how messed up it's become. You can have up to 5 different phone numbers forwarding to your Google Voice number. So I use Google Voice as that's the number I give everybody. It's what I print on my business cards. And then because the reason is I'm changing phone numbers frequently because I try different phones. So I just have it forward to whatever phones I'm currently using. So I find that very useful. But I also understand your confusion because Google's kind of made a hash of it. You can find your voicemails, right? I mean, can you see your voicemails there?
I have trouble, and I've missed some crucial voicemails that caused me grief because.
Yeah, and that's a problem really with the carriers. So they don't treat Google Voice as another carrier. I don't know if that's anti-competitive or what, but that's the same thing with text messages and voicemail messages. There's a gateway that Sprint has a gateway to Verizon, has a gateway to AT&T. But you'll find often, I don't know if this is still the case, but I've found this to be for a long time the case, that for instance, when you sign up, you say, I want text messages from my airline when my flights are delayed, and you try to put a Google Voice number in there, it'll say, no, that's not a real carrier, which is extremely frustrating. And I don't know who to blame there.
I do get notification that, you've got this missed call, and here's a voice mail message, but I don't. It seems like it's not 100% accurate.
No, I agree with you, and I don't know who to blame. Is that Google? My inclination is to blame the carriers that their gateway to Google is not as effective for any competitive reasons or just because of technical reasons. I can't say. Wouldn't be surprised if it's anti-competitive. Because you're using Google Voice as your voicemail client instead of theirs. You're using Google's services instead of theirs. And you know how AT&T and Verizon and Sprint and T-Mobile feel about Google. So I think it was AT&T's chairman who said he wanted to start. This is, by the way, going to become more of a problem, not less, with the reversal of net neutrality, which is coming up for a vote in 2 weeks. AT&T's chairman said, we wish we could charge Google for access to you because Google's costing us so much money because you're using Google so much. This is very frustrating. I don't know if there's a fix, and certainly there's no one at Google you can call. So,
right.
There are other commercial services that operate like Google Voice, but may have more success. You may have more success with. I don't know. I really don't know. I live with it now. One of the things I did is I got a Google has their own carrier called Fi, and I am using Google Fi, so my Google Voice number was converted to a Fi number, and I do notice that I'm able to get text messages more reliably as a Fi customer. So I'm not sure. I really wish I knew what that was all about. If somebody listening has some inside information about Google and Google Voice, Google's a big black box, you know, that you see stuff go in and stuff come out, but you don't know what happens in the middle. And, a really good example, this is a very good example, Google's messaging strategy is also baffling. And everybody I know who covers technology is just baffled. What is Google up to? And you can ask them, and they don't know. And it's just very strange. If you use an Android phone, you commonly have three different choices of text message, four, five. Many choices of text messenger. If I use a Samsung Note 8, for instance, there'll be a Samsung program called Messages. There's an Android program from Google called Messages. There's Hangouts, which I prefer to use because Hangouts has a desktop interface and it works with Google Voice. There's Allo, which is Google's Google Assistant powered messaging app, but that doesn't seem to work with text messages. Facebook works fine with text messages, so you could use Facebook Messenger. You could use it's crazy. I wish I knew what was going on with Google Voice. I guess the only answer I can really give you, Phil, is there is no answer, and it's just what we put up with as Google Voice users. If I feel like Google has almost abandoned it, and yet they just released a new version of Google Voice, and I can't figure it out for the life of me. You know what I'll do this week? I will try to get through somebody at Google one more time and see if I can get an answer to what the heck they're doing. It's just a bafflement, and you're not alone. There are many other choices of kind of voice. Digital voice services, Grasshopper, for instance, that are quite good, that will do many of the same things, but you have to pay a fee. And maybe that explains Google's, lack of support. It's Google Voice is free. So what do you, let me ask the chat room and anybody listening, what do you use? What do you like? Is there anything works better than Google Voice? You can call 8888-ASK-LEO. You can visit us at irc.twit.tv. That's the chat room. Or use the website, techguylabs.com, and put your comments up there, too. Techguylabs.com. We divide the website into shows, and each show into hours, each hour into questions. So it'd be hour number one, the last or second to last question of hour number one. And you could put your thoughts, your comments there. That's free, by the way. There's no charge for that. Techguylabs.com. It's a puzzlement. Tis a puzzlement. We're going to take a little break. News at the top of the hour. We will come back. Maybe somebody can solve the Google Voice conundrum for us. More of your calls still to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Wow. 25 years ago tomorrow, the first text message, SMS text message was sent. That's kind of cool, isn't it, Scott?
That's very cool.
Yeah. I'm going to set you up here.
Thank you.
And you may take the floor.
I thank you so very much.
You're very welcome.
So Jim Four actually turned me on to a TV brand I had never heard before. And they're even based in California, for God's sake.
Who could that possibly be?
It's A-T-Y-M-E.
A-Time.
A-Time?
A-T-Y.
Maybe A-Time or Adam. I don't know how you even say it. But they say their website is A-Time, A-T-Y-M-E.net. They're in Escondido, California.
What?
It says their products are designed at that location. They must be made in China. They have to be. I don't see any prices here, but they've
designer
got...
designer-inspired elegance.
Elegance, yes.
Elegance. 4K UHD.
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't see anything about high dynamic range.
No, that's interesting.
Although that would be quite surprising if at least their tie-in didn't. Where to buy? Oh, no. Actually, no. I want to look at products. Let's see what they got. Standard TV and premium TV.
Ooh.
Wow. A 50-inch full HD. That means 1080p. It's like, what?
That's the biggest they make.
That's the biggest
they
make.
That's not even out. Future release. You know what? This is a new. They do have a 4K. It looks like
they do have three of them. Apparently,
not available. Future release. Wait a minute.
Oh, they do make a 55 and a 65.
Future release. None of the premium TVs are available today.
Okay.
Not available.
Not available. Future release. You're right. You're right.
So.
I'm
not going to worry about this company much longer.
No, not yet anyway. I had never heard of them before. It's quite amazing. And they say absolutely nothing about high dynamic range that I can see, which is going to just blow them right out of the water just to begin with. I'm not going to be that interested. If it can't do high dynamic range, it's like yawn city. Of course, they're probably really inexpensive. So, who knows? Very interesting. Lumpy says fries.com carries them, but they obviously not the ones that they're saying future release. Jim Four, yeah, they've got plenty of HD TVs, 1080p, as well as a few 4Ks. Ken Crayley 20, how are you? Good to see you. Oh, man. Here is one of the great screen names. Probably might be inspired by Tuba Christmas at Forest Lawn. Graveyard Tuba. No, it doesn't look like a gray market TV to me, Graveyard Tuba. Tokyo Jim says vaporware. That may be. And they're sold at Walmart too, RF Guy says. Huh. You know, it's very interesting. Let's see. Ken Crayley is asking, I'm going to get a 4K TV around the time of the Super Bowl, February 50-inch, around $375. I bet you'll be able to get one around then at that price. 50-inch, probably not one of the big names. I don't think, you know, it'll have to be one of the maybe Westinghouse might do it. I've not been really impressed with Westinghouse TVs. I never recommend buying the store brands of Insignia or Scepter or Element. Those are the real cheapies, but in that case, you get what you pay for. Sad to say, but that's the way it is. So let's see. Who else has got a question here? A-Time TVs. That's pretty funny. User 0750 says one of his family members bought a Vizio P series, which I like very much. I really do. And he asked if it's true that it doesn't come with a remote with numbers or volume. That used to be true. The 2016 model came with a tablet instead of a real remote. They saw the error of their ways and now they ship it with a regular remote. Jack was asking about the difference between 2016 LG B6 panel in 2017. And there certainly are differences between the panels in 2016 and 2017. The main difference being two main differences. One is the 2016 had a, as I recall, kind of a magenta cast to it. And you only saw it in certain scenes or images or types of images, but it was there. The other one was that it had a lot of noise in the low light areas. So this is what we often call shadow detail. So if you have a dark scene and some slightly lighter parts of it, you'll get more noise in that area. The 2017s cleaned that up quite a bit. Now, the one thing that the 2016s have that the 2017s don't, although this doesn't apply to the B series, the B series in 2016 did not have 3D, but all of the other lines of LG OLED did have 3D. None of the 2017s have 3D. And there is a strong contingent on AVS Forum of people who really like their 3D and are very disappointed that it's basically disappearing from modern TVs. You can still get it in older TVs, but almost no modern TVs have it anymore. Projectors still do, which I find very interesting. The Sony projectors have it. Most projectors, as I recall, still have 3D. But TVs don't. And so that's another difference between 2016 and 2017 LGs, except for the B series, which didn't have it in either case. let's see. Beatmaster is asking, is there any reason not to buy first or second generation UHD Blu-ray players for cheap these days? I don't think there's much of an advantage with newer models. I would agree. The only thing I would say is that newer models are probably more likely to have Dolby Vision capability. And there are more Ultra HD Blu-ray discs coming out with Dolby Vision. And if the Blu-ray player does streaming, then if it has Dolby Vision capabilities, that will translate to the streaming apps that provide it, like Netflix, Vudu, Amazon, so on. So I tend to agree with you that there's no real reason to avoid, you know, the first or second generation. I mean, yeah, they'll make incremental improvements in the newer models, but I don't think it's really any problem at all to buy an older model for cheap. Web 8006 says, with the just announced HDMI 2.1 spec, which is pretty interesting, will that make it into the top end 2018 models? No. We don't have any chipsets yet. They only released the spec last week. So we don't have chipsets yet. I don't expect to see HDMI 2.1 until 2019 products. There you go.
Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure. See you next week.
Have a great week and good luck with Tuba Christmas tomorrow.
Merry Tuba Christmas.
Merry Tuba Christmas.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and of course, I think we might start talking about holiday gifts. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number, if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you'd like to talk about technology. I'm here to talk about it with you. I should mention, and I probably should have led the show with this, but if you use a Macintosh computer and you've upgraded to the latest version of Mac OS High Sierra, there was a serious, serious bug in High Sierra that allowed anybody to log into your computer with a blank password. Oopsies. Now, they'd have to have physical access to their computer. Although some advanced users who maybe have turned on a technology called Secure Shell, SSH, may have also been vulnerable to this. That's not clear. Apple, you may have noticed, maybe you didn't notice. I didn't know Apple had this capability, but they pushed out an update that was automatically installed without really any notification. I think they did it on Thursday. We discovered the flaw on Tuesday. Somebody tweeted it, and yes, it's true. I tweeted a short-term workaround. which was to give a password to the root account. The root account is a super user account that can do anything on your computer, even down to erasing the hard drive or maybe worse, installing malicious software and then erasing its tracks. It is, you know, the root user is the one you really want to protect. On Macintoshes, it's normally an account that's disabled. There isn't even a root user account, but somehow in the update to High Sierra, Apple inadvertently apparently enabled it and enabled it without a password. So this was a fairly serious flaw, which Apple quickly and quietly fixed. Then they pushed out an update, which broke the fix. So I don't know what's going on over there in Cupertino, but geez, guys, that's pretty bad. It's not unheard of. In fact, for a long time, and Microsoft didn't even bother to fix it. We knew that there was a hidden administrator account on many Windows computers back in the, I think this was back in the XP days. And it was actually handy because you could log into an administrator account with no password, and if you forgot your regular password, you could fix it. I think part of the reason that didn't raise a ruckus is because, hey, you could do that in Windows 95 and 98, too. Everybody knew if you didn't know the password, just hit return, and it would log you in. There wasn't much security at all. XP was the next version after that. We weren't used to security, so we didn't expect XP to really work flawlessly when it came to security. But nowadays, I think there's a reasonable expectation that if you've got a modern computer running Windows 10 or Mac OS, that you should – these things should not happen. It would be a big deal if you, for instance, used Macs in the office. And if somebody knew about this and said, oh, you mean I could just sit down at Leo's computer and log in and be the root user? Yeah, you could. That's not good. So that Apple fix was pushed out. You kind of want to make sure you've got it. And if you did upgrade afterwards, you need to reapply the fix, and even more importantly, you need to restart the computer. And I think a lot of people with Macintoshes don't restart the computer. So this was kind of a mess, and it's not clear really what state most Macs will be in. You had to be running High Sierra. I think a lot of people hadn't yet upgraded to the latest version of Mac OS, so maybe this isn't as widespread of a problem as it could have been. Apple did push out a silent fix a couple of days later. They broke the fix. Presumably, even maybe by the time you hear this, Apple will do the same thing. Push out a fix to the patch that broke the fix to the... What a mess. What a mess. Back to the phones we go. 8888-ASK-LEO. Line 4, Peter, Covina, California. Hi, Peter.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Hey, I'm fine. Welcome.
Yes, good to hear from you. Long-time listener from G4 period.
My. That is a long time.
Leo, got a question. So I'm an Apple fan. I have two iPhone 10. And
you have two iPhone 10s?
Yes, and a Series 3 iWatch.
Why do you have two iPhone 10s?
One for business and one for personal.
Wow.
Just got lucky.
You like the iPhone 10. I agree with you, and I like the Series 3 watch. I also wear that. So what can I do for you?
Question I have is wireless charging. I am tired of having four wires coming out of my wall to charge all the appliances.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Yeah.
Question I have is, are there any chargers out there that can charge multiple devices at one time, or is it one at a time only?
Apple is pushing out, and you're probably going to get this since it sounds like you buy all everything Apple makes. Apple will push out early next year their new charging pad, which will charge your phone and your Apple Watch simultaneously. And first thing you need to know is that the Apple iPhone 10 uses wireless charging technology called Qi, Q-I.
Yes.
And so there are multiple Qi chargers. The problem is the Apple Watch, which isn't exactly Qi, 100% Qi compatible. And yeah. I don't know of any way that you can charge an iPhone and an Apple Watch on a single device. I do know a number of companies that make stands, for instance, that will charge your iPhone and your watch and has a special little holder for the...
Yes, I got those already.
Yeah. So that's about as close as you're going to come until Apple comes out with its pad, because I think Apple's doing something unusual with its pad so that it'll work with the Apple Watch. You know, I don't... you know, that they've talked about this. But it's they haven't really made clear what this pad is going to do. So you know, they call it Air Power, and
yes.
I presume it will be available. It also charges the if you have AirPods, which I bet you do.
I do have some questions. Question.
If you have AirPods, you have to get a new case though, because AirPods are not wireless, but they are going to make an AirPod case that you can put your AirPods into, and so that pad will do all three. Apple announced that.
Yes, I lost the case already, so that don't look. That's my next question.
Wait a minute, you lost the case, but not the headphones, huh?
Not the headphone. I just lost the case, and I was wondering: are there any second market accessory to charge the AirPods only?
No,
AirPods.
No, because Apple has not made that available to anybody. You're gonna be, you know. So what you got to do is cross your fingers that Apple releases it. All they said is 2018. They didn't say how early or how late in 2018.
Well, one last question is, you know, since I want to charge two iPhone at the same time, will it be overburdened, the adapter for an aftermarket key charger?
That's another good question. So if an aftermarket key charger is designed for multiple phones, then you should be all right. So key charging doesn't specify how much wattage an individual charger can support. And so you're going to want to get a high wattage charger. Yes. But I think that anybody who's selling one with multiple pads. So the way this works, you know this, but I'll tell everybody else. The way it works is there's a little coil inside the device, the phone, and then it's inductive, what we call inductance charging. And then there's a little coil inside the pad. And when the coil on the phone nears the coil on the pad, it actually generates electricity in the coil on the phone by, you know, in effect, circling, you know, moving the electrons in that coil. And so you need to be near the coil, the charging coil. So a multiple charging pad will have multiple coils in it, positioned in such a way that you can put the phone on it. And obviously, they'll have to have enough wattage feeding each to make it work. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I don't know when this Air Power thing is going to come out. Let me see. You know, the watch support for Qi is questionable. So they're going to have to, I think, change the Qi standard. so that's now Apple sells the Belkin. I don't know there. I've seen, I had a pad, I think it was Anker. This is an Anker charger. You can see they put on the Anker charger, they put a logo where you're supposed to put the phone. And this one is, outputs 5 watts. So that's not going to be super fast charging, but the good news is the phone will charge. It just will take longer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88. Ask Leo. I like wireless charging. I've been a fan for years. It's funny now that Apple's doing it. I'm grateful to you, Apple. At least if they put wireless charging in the new iPhone X, at least they used the standard that everybody else is using. There are two standards. There's PowerMat and Qi, QI. But fortunately, Apple decided to go with Qi charging. So that means there are a whole bunch of chargers out there. Actually, I think Apple probably had to because they don't make a charger. So somebody at Apple said, you know, if we don't do Qi charging, we're going to have to sell our own and we don't have any. So maybe we should just go with the standard. So unusual for Apple to do that. but now that they're doing it, it's funny. Many manufacturers are going away from it. Samsung still does wireless charging. The problem is you can't make a metal case and do wireless charging. You have to do plastic or glass or ceramic or something that will allow power to go through it. And many manufacturers now move to metal phones following Apple's lead. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number, 888-827-5536. Glenn on the line from Louisiana. Hi, Glenn.
Hello, Leo. I just recently upgraded my phone. I went from a Samsung Note 4 to an iPhone 8 Plus.
Yay.
The day after Thanksgiving. And this is the first time that my phone company doesn't subsidize the price for my phone.
Yeah, it kind of takes your breath away, doesn't it, when you see what these actually cost?
It does. And when I'm thinking that this is going to vary every 24 months.
Yikes.
So I haven't even taken the phone out of the box, and actually I'm trying to find the right case for it.
And here's what I would suggest taking a look at. Apple does this, but I think your carrier might also do it. But I like the way Apple does it. Apple will take the cost of the phone and spread it out over 24 months with zero interest, so it doesn't cost you any more. They also include Apple Care Plus, and then whenever a new phone comes out, when the iPhone 9 comes out, you just bring in your old iPhone. It has to be working in good condition, you know. Otherwise, they'll do some repairs and charge you for that. And you swap it out for the new one, and your payments just continue. So they divide the cost of the phone into 24 payments. But every year, every 12 months, you get a new phone. And then that's kind of what the carriers were doing with the subsidies, right? They didn't eat the cost of the phone. They just added it to your bill and charged you every month.
So what I wanted to know was, what case would you recommend for like an A Plus? Yeah. I understand that he has glass in the back.
You don't want it to break. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on how you feel about cases. I typically will put on a rubber case that is clear, so you can still see the phone, from a company like Spigen, S-P-I-G-E-N, and these are inexpensive. They're under $10. Or Ringke, R-I-N-G-K-E. They make these molded polyurethane cases. They're soft touch. They're easier to grip. And they are durable enough so that if the phone falls on an edge, you're not going to lose the phone. Now, there's always the risk that the phone will fall on its glass screen. And if it hits something on the glass screen, that screen is going to crack. So there are, even if you're worried about that, at the cost of the phone, almost $1,000, I understand why you are. What you should look at is a case that has a cover over it. And one of the best known is OtterBox. They make military spec tough cases, OtterBox, that will protect the phone. And they make some cases with a cover on it. You might also look at the wallet cases. There are cases that can replace your wallet and hold the phone, and those all have a cover as well. And that
which
way,
one would you recommend in that
CaseMe, CaseMe has some very nice wallet phones. Some, you know, fairly inexpensive. You know, under $50. I don't get the Apple cases because Apple really seems to overcharge.
And in addition to protecting the phone, you know, one requirement that I would like the case to have is that it will work also as a stand. So if I want to watch a video or something, it will also hold the phone.
Take a look at the case. So if you're interested in a wallet case, take a look at the CaseMe, CaseMe wallet case. It will turn into a stand. In portrait, landscape. There you go. In landscape mode, it'll turn into a stand. They're very inexpensive. They're $26 from the CaseMe site. You can also get it on Amazon, and so you can sit and watch a movie. It also, you can put your money and your credit cards and even coins in there. I have a little zippered coin purse, and it's very protective of the phone because your phone is in a sense in a padded case. So the only risk is, of course, you're on the phone and you drop it, and then of course, all bets are off because if in any case, even with a cover on it, if it's open, you're on the phone and you drop it, that glass screen is still vulnerable. The other thing you might want to look at, given the cost of that phone, is spending a little bit more money, and you can still get this for a few weeks after you buy the phone for Apple Care Plus. And that has a replacement plan. You should look at the fine print because there's a deductible and there's a limited number of times you can use it, I think twice per year. But Apple Care Plus is what most people who buy these expensive phones do. It's an insurance policy, basically. The cost of repairing the I don't know what the cost is on the iPhone 8. It's going to be less than this. But the new iPhone 10, the cost of repairing the screen is $270. And the cost of repairing the back is $500. That's more than many phones. So you definitely, if you're getting a new iPhone, you'll want to ask Apple, what are the repair costs with and without Apple Care Plus? And you may choose.
If I look at one of those cases, the case me, what material should I look?
Well, the less expensive ones are going to be what they call PU leather, which is plastic. It's pleather. Although, frankly, they're in, as far as I can tell, they're indistinguishable from leather, and they're a lot less expensive. Some companies do make real leather cases. It depends on what you feel like aesthetically. From the point of view of protection, it doesn't matter. All of them are equally protective.
So leather, if I wanted leather, leather would be good enough to
It's pretty tough, yeah. Leather's pretty tough. So, and the thing is, because it's a wallet case, you know, it's a padded case. You're doing a really good job. Let me just see what the cost of, let's see, the iPhone 8. I wonder what the cost of repairing the iPhone 8 is. The Apple has a page for service and repair. It's probably fairly expensive. These new phones are so expensive.
Yeah, and even if you do their trade-in program with Apple, they still look at the condition of the phone.
Yeah, you would definitely want a case, but they do require, as part of that, the price of it covers Apple Care Plus, so you are getting insured repairs to it as well. I think that's probably the right thing to do. Let me just see. For the iPhone 8 Plus, screen repair is $169, and other damage is $400. So get the insurance, I guess, is what I'm saying, if you're worried about dropping it and breaking it. $279 for screen repair on the iPhone X, $549. I think that's just that. By Apple's publishing that, just basically is saying, please get the insurance. It's going to cost you. It's going to cost you a lot. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. We love Rocket Mortgage. They're such nice guys. Quicken Loans. Quicken's doing so many amazing things. Quicken Loans is doing so many. I got to make the distinction. They're not Quicken. It's called Quicken Loans. I guess at one point maybe they were owned by, I don't know why the name. They must have been owned by Intuit or something. Anyway, they're not. It's a separate company doing amazing things. They're located in Detroit. They're revitalizing the downtown of Detroit and many other cities too. Just a really smart company, well-run company. And, by the way, if you go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy, you'll see all those customer service awards. The J.D. Power number one in customer satisfaction. Year after year, they just got it again, number one for 2017, both in mortgage servicing and loan approval. And it's loan approval I want to focus on because they've got a new product Quicken Loans does called Rocket Mortgage. That is just for us geeks. See, I know there are plenty of people. I know some people who, when they get a home loan, when they buy a home, they love the process. They can't wait to go to the bank, talk to the banker, have him go through the sheaf of loans that the bank offers and talk about rates, pull out his fancy mortgage calculator and enter in the down payment and the rate and tell you the monthly, you know, hold up the calculator. Here's your monthly payment, all of that stuff. But I personally, that is not something I'm really into. You know what else I hate is going up to the attic to find pay stubs, old bank statements, calling the bank saying, can you send me the bank statement from 2012? I hate that. Maybe some people love it. If you're like me, you want to just do this all and do it easily and fast, you want to know about Rocket Mortgage. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. It is a client-focused technological revolution, home loans. First of all, it takes a minute or two. You go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. You tell them basic information. They have trusted partnerships with all the financial institutions, so they don't need to get you to go to the attic. They've got everything they need. Done. They say, is this you? Do you give us permission? Yes. Done. You won't be faxing them documents or anything. There's no loan calculator involved. What they'll do is they'll crunch the numbers based on income, assets, and credits. They'll say, here are the loans you qualify for. What would you like your down payment to be? What would you like your interest rate to be? What would you like your term to be? They make you an offer. And it's in minutes. It's fast. It's easy from one of the best, I'd say the best lender in the country. It's awesome. You'll apply simply. You'll understand fully every step of the way, and then you can mortgage with confidence from Rocket Mortgage. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Now, I know you're probably not buying a house right this instant, but here's what you do. Bookmark that. Put it on your phone, whatever. So you've got it. You can actually go through the process and get the approval before you decide what house to buy. Because then you can show the realtor, we're approved. They even have a button that says, download and print out the letter. So you show the, sometimes realtors want to see a letter. Okay. Here's the letter. Rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. When it's time to buy or refi, by the way, now's the time to refi. Now's the time. Interest rates low as they can go, and they are not going to stay that way. Rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. We thank Rocket Mortgage for making the Tech Guy podcast possible. And lo and behold, look who's here. Johnny Jett's back from his jaunt to Japan. You were in Japan. I saw your pictures.
I was. You know, it's hard to believe that I was only there for a couple nights.
Aren't we in an amazing age? We flew to New York, saw a couple of shows, came back in a couple of days too. Not as long as you flew. But it's amazing. I think we take this for granted.
We're so lucky. Yeah. I agree. We are so. I always tell people, if my great grandparents or even my grandparents knew what I did for a living, that, you know, a few weeks ago I went to Hawaii for dinner. I mean, if they knew that, they wouldn't be able to comprehend it. I sometimes have a hard time. They came out here
on a covered wagon, and it took all year, and they ate half the party on the way. And you wake up, go to bed in L.A., wake up in Tokyo. It's amazing.
It's awesome. I mean, actually. L.A. to Tokyo is the same distance as L.A. to London, which a lot of people don't realize. It's exactly the same.
Interesting.
In miles.
Interesting.
So it's really not that long of a trip, and especially when you come home, it's only 9 hours.
So what brought you to Japan for 2 days?
You know, I went for Marriott. They invited me to check out their new they're trying to take the image of just business hotels to make it resorts. And that's what they're doing in Asia Pacific.
Nice.
And they have really nice resorts. And actually, I went to this one in Tsuzhenji, which is about 2 or 3 hours outside of Tokyo. You take the train right near Mount Fuji. I posted a couple pictures on Instagram. And you can get a room for $100 a night. And there's also rooms with your own hot spring on the balcony.
Wow.
And that's what it's famous for, because, you know, Japan is full of volcanoes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But to get one of these, I mean, I was just sitting on the balcony and overlooking, and it was just beautiful fall day.
That sounds wonderful.
Really, yeah, and it's cheap. People don't realize you can really save money when you get to Asia. Even Japan, and Japan is notoriously expensive.
Yeah, I mean, they have a very high standard of living. I love the pictures on the train from to Tokyo to the airport. And look at this. Japanese lunch.
And you would love the Japanese food. And
We're going soon. I can't wait.
Well good, because my website is for you then. So it's called bento.com.
Now, bento are those little lunch boxes, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this site's actually been around since 1994. But they are the unbiased experts in Japan and Tokyo for food.
They have
over 2,000 restaurants have been selected, and you can, you know, sort by whatever city you're going to, all major cities. They'll show you even recipes, but all the articles. And, you know, instead of going to somewhere like Yelp, this is a much better choice.
Wow, there's a ramen museum in Yokohama.
Yokohama's right next to Tokyo.
I actually go there.
My train went right through
there.
It's
like fun.
So I think you will love this website.
This looks really – it's making me hungry. Bento.
And it's only bilingual source, I think, for unbiased reviews.
There you go. So when you want reviews of Japanese restaurants, this is the place.
Yes. Yes. And by the way, before we get to the app, I thought I'd talk about American Airlines. You know, they had a glitch this week.
Yeah, I'm flying American on December 22nd. Tell me I'll be able to get a flight.
Yeah. Yeah. Do not worry. I think the news jumped all over it a little bit too early, but supposedly the unions went to the media and they were smart, because they really got the airline to to pony up some money. So supposedly there was a glitch in programming for the pilots for vacation pay, or for not vacation pay, for vacation time. If a vacation said I want to, if a pilot said I want to go on vacation between December 17th and 31st, it allowed them, all of them pretty much. So they didn't have flights covered. And so anyway, American then said, you know, we'll give you time and a half. But then the unions came back and now they're paying double. And everyone, so all the pilots are going to get double between that period. They're all going to take it. You're not going to have to worry about your flight being canceled. I actually have two American flights canceled between that. Yeah, they should be much happier.
The pilots will be smiling when they fly you. Yeah, because it's three days before Christmas, and I thought, oh, this is so bad. I'm never going to get to the Virgin Islands.
And I flew American to Japan, by the way.
I like American, you know, actually.
Well, on their new 777s with the new lie-flat seats, they're really nice. It's, you know, it's configured in business class 1-2-1.
I like that, too, because if you're a solo traveler in some of those business class seats, you're really in somebody else's lap. And I don't really like that. I don't know that guy.
No. So you have a lot of privacy.
Yeah, that's nice.
This is definitely the way to go. Nice. And by the way, on the flight home, we hit such a tailwind. I looked at the flight map. We were going 740 miles an hour at one point. Whoa. And I was like, I don't think I've ever gone that fast before.
Nice.
Which is pretty cool. And another quick thing, by the way, did you see about the airlines are now banning smart luggage?
What?
Yes. So if you have smart
luggage.
What's
smart luggage?
You know, with a lithium battery.
Oh, I do. I have an Away bag. I love them. They were an advertiser.
Can that battery be removed?
No.
As long as it can be removed, you can bring it on. But if you can't, actually...
Not as carry-on or checked luggage or either?
Either on some of them. The airline's policies differ, but they're mostly not going to take into effect to January 15th. So make sure you read in advance because you don't want to show up in the airport and they're like, sorry, you can't, you know, bring this on the plane and you're screwed. So make sure you double check. But, you know, the smart bags are great because you can either weigh them or track them.
Yeah, some people even ride them. Yeah, and you can ride. There's one you can ride. That's not. Yeah, I've actually done it.
I've done it. Yeah, I did it in Sweden last summer.
Wow,
it's an American company. They're based in Chicago.
Wow. Yeah, it's kind of silly.
It's silly, but it's pretty fun to ride. It's like cruising around a little mini bike.
I have an order on Kickstarter for smart luggage too. I wonder if it's too late to get out of my pledge. Well, so you want it if you can remove the battery, which makes sense. You would want to anyway, so you could charge it up and stuff.
Yeah, so if you can remove it, you can. And the reason why is because they're afraid that it will start a fire.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, they don't like lithium ion batteries. I know that.
No, they do not. And I got a quick question for you. While you were in New York, you stayed at the W Times Square, it looked like, on your Instagram.
I sure did.
So did they charge you resort fee, but they call it an urban destination fee?
Yes, a destination fee.
That drives me nuts.
It wasn't huge. I can't remember what it was.
$25, I think.
A day.
But
per person. Yeah,
but that's ridiculous. But you know, all the hotels now, or the big major hotels, are trying to add this fee.
Yeah,
on so
and
they
then
can
they give you
money.
Like they give you like, oh, you free get a $20 credit. Yeah, free Wi-Fi, $20 credit towards drinks in the bar. But they did give me something that we used, which was two admissions to Gulliver's Gate, which is normally $36 each.
I don't even know what that is. What's Gulliver's Gate?
Next time you're in New York, I was talking about it at the beginning of the show. It's a block-sized miniature of the whole world. You can go to the Taj Mahal everywhere, and they're tiny, tiny people, little teeny weeny people, and it's like a train set. The trains are going. And
where is this?
It's on Times Square. Gulliver's Gate. You got to go.
I'm typing it in right now.
Give me an app because you only have a minute left.
Okay, sorry. So my app is Car Hopper. Okay, so I know you like luxury cars, and I've talked about cars where you can rent from other consumers.
Yeah.
But this one allows you to rent luxury cars directly from the manufacturer or from luxury car suppliers.
Whoa.
So they're only in certain cities, Fort Lauderdale, LA, Vegas, Miami, New York, the Hamptons, Orlando, San Francisco. But you can get, you know, a Rolls Royce,
Ferrari, Lamborghini, Huracan,
directly from a supplier, a luxury supplier, not from some third party.
Wow.
$2,100 in LA for next week, I just checked. Yeah. Or you can get a Chevrolet Camaro. I don't know how that's luxury, but
it's for $85.
Nice. It's fun to drive. It's available free on iOS and Android. You just got to put in, you search the date, the destination, and you'll tell you which luxury cars are available. Supposedly takes less than 60 seconds, and you can book anything between a BMW and a Bentley.
And this is all on your website, I'm sure. JohnnyJet.com. JohnnyJet.com. Follow him on Twitter, JohnnyJet. Instagram, JohnnyJet. He's all over the world. He's all over the place. He's our travel guru, Johnny Jet. Thanks, John. Safe travels.
Thank you. Thank you, too.
That's, you know, in Paris, you see these same kind of cars all over, and they rent them for half an hour for like $48. You can drive it for half an hour.
I like that. That's all you need it for.
Yeah, but there's, but you don't want to drive in Paris because you can't get 5 feet in half an hour. So.
That's true. That is true.
But it is, it's kind of like, I guess that's the idea, right?
Right.
Is that you get to drive a fancy car. So I got to see what kind of cars they have here. Do they have a Ford GT? Somebody wants to know. That's a fancy car.
I have not looked. I'm putting the notes in the show, in the chat room.
All right, thank you.
And on my Twitter account, so in case anyone is interested in these. Also, when I was in Tokyo, I spent the night in Tokyo as well.
Oh, so
not just outside.
I need all your information. This bento box is great. This bento.com. That's awesome.
Good.
I want to go to this ramen museum. They have, this looks incredible. It's a miniature town. It's a museum of ramens from 1958, and there's like 8 of the best ramen, regional ramen shops in the country are there. Anyway, I don't think I'm going to get to Yokohama, but it sounds so cool.
It's Yokohama's right there. It's
yeah, but we're on a tour. We're on a
15 minutes from the
tour. We can't do anything.
Oh, yeah, you're on talk. Yeah, they're going to have everything.
They program
and by the way, in Tokyo, you can rent like a real little go-kart and drive around a city in a go-kart.
I know. I see these Mario
carts.
It's
a tour.
I see people in Mario carts driving around. So silly.
Yeah.
That's so silly. We're going Korean Air, and I think they have a very nice lie flat, I hope.
They do. I've done it a bunch of times.
Yep.
Korean's great. And again, you have a layover in Seoul, or are you spending a night in Seoul?
I don't think so. I think it's a quick...
Okay, so actually make sure when you're looking at the in-flight map right before you land, or turn on the in-flight map and see how far out you go from North Korea. You do like you'll do a big zigzag so you don't go into North Korea airspace. Otherwise, you'd go straight down.
Oh, yeah.
And also, but when you get into the Seoul airport, there's a heritage museum. And I think around 3 o'clock during the day, they do a whole parade through the airport. But check out this museum. It's pretty cool. And actually, when you're in Tokyo, you have to get these.
What are they? French fries?
You get them at, there are these. They're like McDonald's French fries, but potato chips.
Oh, that looks good.
And you get them in the airport. Yeah. And there's only certain stores. So if you're flying out of Haneda, it's by gate 109.
Okay.
In Narita, I can't remember which gate. But ask for these. And you can only buy a limit of 5 boxes, and they just go flying off the shelf. The first time I saw it was a couple of years ago, and people were going crazy over them.
Wow.
And I was like, I just bought them, and I got home and tasted them. I'm like, oh my God, no wonder why they were going crazy. So I just stocked up just now.
Wow. You had fun for 2 days, though. But I guess you sleep on the plane.
Yeah, actually, I did not sleep in Japan. I could not fall asleep.
I know.
My allergies were killing me in Japan.
Oh, no, really? Oh.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
That's only happened once before. I've been to Japan at least 5 times, but twice now my allergies were just so bad that my nose was just peeling.
Oh.
And I actually left early. I had to leave early.
I got to get you one of these molecule air filters. They're purifiers. They're a sponsor. And Lisa, same thing. In fact, when we came home, our house sitter had turned it off. And Lisa woke up. She was stuffed up. And I said, oh, the molecule's off. This thing is amazing. MOLEKULE.
I would love to check it out. And, you know, you can't bring certain drugs into Japan. I'm talking about over-the-counter drugs like Tylenol.
Really? They ban it there. Good. They should. It's dangerous.
So
good.
I didn't bring any allergy medicine.
I'll study all of this stuff before we go, I guess. We got till March.
All right.
Thank you, Johnny.
Have a great week.
You too. Take
care. All right.
Take
care.
Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Moving on to Christian in San Diego. Hi, Christian.
Hello.
Hey, welcome to the show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
I work for a
small accounting company, and I'm helping out with installing some new computers.
Oh, you got the job, huh?
Yeah.
They don't. Now, wait a minute. How small is this accounting company? They don't have an IT department?
No, we're just about 9 people, part-time and full-time.
Best thing I ever did in our small company is hire a contract IT guy who turned out to be a genius. I think we lucked out. We got the best guy I've ever seen. But boy, it makes a difference. Yeah, it's okay. You're going to do a good job. You're the contract IT guy now.
Well, I'm always bragging that I listen to Leo Laporte.
That's it, huh? That was your qualifying resume. All right. Well, let's get you going. What do you need to know?
So I'm in the process of transferring all the data from the current computers that we have, and we're using Google Drive. And I don't know if
so you have a fiduciary responsibility as an accounting firm to your clients,
yeah,
to secure their data. You have I'm sure you have a legal obligation. You also have just a moral obligation, because you have some very private stuff like tax returns, including social security numbers, business finance numbers. You have a lot of stuff that your clients fully expect you to protect. Google Drive is not the answer.
Right. So I finally convinced my boss to move to a better product, maybe Carbonite.
Carbonite is a very good choice. Now, they're an advertiser, but they do have plans. In fact, they have, for instance, a data migration plan that would solve this whole issue for you, and that would do it with strong encryption and, of course, compliant with any federal regulations. I am not up on whatever federal regs there are about accounting, but I bet you that there are some serious privacy requirements, and you don't want to, maybe state and federal, and you don't want to get in trouble here. And it's just the right thing to do. So, you're going to be looking for business solutions that offer encryption, and you want two kinds of encryption. You want encryption in transit. That's pretty easy to do. Almost, if you're surfing the web and you go to your bank or you go to Amazon, that's encrypted in transit. That's a, well understood system, that's pretty easy to do. You also want encryption in place. You want to make sure that those keys are well controlled. Ideally, you'd like to use a system where only you have the decryption key. They don't, so that, you keep tight control of your client's privacy there. You also really want to lock down your systems in the office. I don't want to talk you out of a job, but this really is a case where the problem is finding somebody really good, but a good IT professional, among other things. Do you have any, when you connect to the internet, do you have any security appliances in between you and the outside world?
We do. We have a firewall. But as far as our backup, we were using Google, and I wasn't really comfortable with it. So I finally, I finally convinced my boss, hey, we have to move to something more.
Yeah. I mean, Google probably provides some encryption. I don't know of any exploits, any exfiltration of information from Google, but I think even Google themselves will say, we're not intended for use in situations like like medical information or accounting information. I think that that's probably...
The user-friendliness of Google?
Yeah.
Carbonite be similar to Google?
Well, for you it would be, do you also have to share, for instance, clients send you data, right?
Yes.
Do they are you having them just put it on Google Drive and sharing that document with you?
No, unfortunately, still doing it through email.
Their email, it's even worse.
Yeah.
So that's another thing you're going to want to look at is a system... Microsoft. Are you a Microsoft shop, or what? Whose software do you use?
Yes, we're using Microsoft. We just purchased some new computers, so I finally convinced our boss to get some.
This
hardware.
Might be an occasion to take a look at what Microsoft offers, because they do have good business solutions. And I'm not just talking about backup, but file sharing, collaboration.
Would OneDrive be pretty safe?
You don't want to use you'll use something like OneDrive, but it won't be OneDrive. It'll be SharePoint and things like that. You want to use their business class, not their this is the problem. And your boss and you and everybody have experience with consumer grade applications, but in this application at this time, you need to use something that's designed for business grade security because of your clients, you know. If you were a grocery store, I wouldn't worry so much, although, you know, and then you might have credit card numbers.
Yes.
But you have some, you know, you have, just think social security numbers alone, EINs, employee ID numbers, things like that. Those things need to be kept absolutely secure, and you have a very high responsibility to do that to your clients. So I would, you know what you can do, you know, I know cost is a concern here. But what you can do is you can call. I would call Microsoft and say, tell them what you need and say, what do you have that can take care of this? There'll be solutions that are encrypted, that are safe. Carbonite is basically about some of what you need. For instance, the data migration part, the backup part. They certainly have data protection things, but they're not so much about collaboration. So, for instance, if you have two accountants working on the same returns, they're collaborating. Those should not be stored on Google Drive. They should be stored on SharePoint and some higher end Microsoft solutions. OneDrive, you know, is the consumer brand name for what you'll be using. You'll be using Azure servers, and I think a call to Microsoft would probably be the best bet here. Call a Microsoft's business consultant, and that's what these guys do. They won't charge you a lot, but the costs of these services, you know, may put them out of your reach. I don't know, but you know you get what you pay for, and the free services you're getting for, or the inexpensive if you're getting G Suite services from Google. I don't know if they're adequate really to do what you need to do.
That makes sense.
You got a little homework ahead of you. I'm sorry to say, and I am not an expert. I want to be the first to say I'm not an expert in this.
But at least now I can download the podcast. And
yeah. This is a good for you, though. You know what? You're going to in a way, this is an opportunity for you because these skills that you're going to learn here and getting this set up right is very valuable.
Okay. So can I ask one final question?
Sure.
Should I even start the process of turning on the computers and setting them up? And downloading the software that we normally use, and then
if you have time, if you have just a day, like Monday, go into the office on Monday, and just call around. You know, every company like Microsoft and Salesforce, all these companies, even Google, have salespeople who act as consultants who will help you for free, help you figure out what you need to do. They'll answer this question really at a higher level than I'm going to answer it. You'll have to understand they're going to be pitching you on their products, so there's a little sales involved as well. But the information they've got there, and by the way, Carbonite, you can today you can go look at carbonite.com and see if, for instance, the data migration services they offer would be valuable. You also want to look at things like, you know, Carbonite, for instance, you know, you do a lot of tax returns? Is your busy season April?
Starts
now, yeah. You couldn't afford to be down for 5 days because a lightning strike hit your building and knocked out all the servers. So that's the kind of thing that companies like Carbonite are specialists in. We call them data protection companies. They're there to provide you with a service that if the worst happened, if the building burnt down, that you would get back to work immediately. And that's going to be important come you know, April 1st when you've got 2 weeks. That's going to be a big issue. So all of these things.
Everybody has standalone computers. We usually just back up our tax.
Yeah, if you're doing stuff locally, you're good. Yeah, locally is fine, except that if something happens to the office, that's not so good. So ultimately, you do need to look at cloud. But if you're doing cloud, you need to do it securely. Because as soon as you put your client's information out there, it's vulnerable. I think Carbonite is, I know they're a sponsor, and another disclaimer, but I think they are a very good place to start, at least for your backup, perhaps your migration solutions. And they have hybrid solutions might be just right for you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I mean, you could cobble together, you know, I use Tresorit, T-R-E-S-O-R-I-T, which is an encrypted backup solution. There's Spider Oak. But these are all consumer-grade things. I think you need something a little bit more heavy-duty. Is the boss saying, you know, we can't spend any money on this? Or
he, that's the thing. He wants to keep it as low budget as possible.
Yeah, of course he does. I don't blame him.
And we were just using consumer-grade stuff, and so I was kind of worried since, you know, the responsibility came my way. Hey, can you set these up? I thought, oh, no.
I know.
Here's a good chance.
I know. Do you guys pay for Google's app stuff, the G Suite stuff, or do you don't just use consumer?
Just a consumer. We just upgraded our storage to, like, the basic 100 gigabyte.
Well, I mean, I do think Google does a good job of security. And they do encryption and all of that. You know, this is what I would do this weekend is find out what regulations you're subject to in terms of privacy and security. Because then you can go to the boss and say, look, boss, you know, I don't know what it is, but it's in the medical business, it's HIPAA. You can say, you know, we need a HIPAA compliant solution. So find out what the compliance standards are for what you guys do. And then you can say to Google, look, we need to meet these requirements. Do you do this? Google does do, you know, both in transit and in place encryption. I'll tell you what worries me about Google Drive. When you share a file, for instance, on Google Drive, we've learned because a journalist found out, Google scans that the data in there because she shared a file and it got blocked by Google for violating standards, which is interesting because that's supposed to be a private document I'm sharing privately. How did Google know that? It turned out to be an error. But what that told us was Google is accessing the contents of people's files. So that worries me quite a bit. So, you know, I'm looking at the Google security policies and they look good, but if you're not even using the business version, if you're using the consumer, I just don't know. Google does encrypt all data in transit, which is very good. But for instance, Google Drive is not HIPAA compliant. That's the privacy regulations for medical records. If something's not HIPAA compliant, then it's not good enough for you. Would be my.
That makes sense.
Yeah, your data needs to be as secure as patient records.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's the biggest concern.
Yeah. I wonder, accounting privacy regulation.
And we don't have a server or anything like that. We would just have standalone computers. So I was hoping to find something where, you know, we can avoid having to spend money into having a server. And
yeah, I mean, a server is fine, but it's local. So you do have to have off-site, right?
Yes.
And so off-site then is immediately, you know, triggers that, oh, we got to be compliant with whatever it is, Graham Leach Bailey or whatever it is. There are finance, you know, financial institutions have some very strict rules. So I just don't know what exact rules your industry is subject to, but I would find out.
Okay.
The fact that Google Drive is not HIPAA compliant, to me,
that's a big red flag.
It's a big red flag. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, time to talk computers, the internet. Home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, securing your accounting practice, and more. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number, 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. I'm not an expert on things like, you know, securing your accounting practice, like our final caller of the hour, but there are certainly rules and regulations. Anybody who's dealing, it actually terrifies me, to be honest, because I hear all the time, and this is going to happen to you in the next few months if you have somebody prepare your taxes for you. where I'll hear from people who say, you know, my accountant said I should email him my my all the information. Is that safe? No. My I hear these happen all the time. Frankly, the state of the art in security and privacy is very poor in general out there. And I am certainly not the guy to stem the tide here. This is something we need to get going, because, you know, we're hearing about breaches everywhere, all the time. Every company, it seems, is letting your personal information out to the public. The Equifax breach, a perfect example. Pretty much the entire financial history of every person, every adult in the United States, leaked out to bad guys who are doing we don't know what with it. There are rules. There are best practices. There are rules in almost every industry. You know, the one that comes to mind is HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Privacy Act, which did a lot to protect patient records. It's not, but an accountant would have different obligations, obviously. And there are federal regulations. There are also best practices that, you know, you need to know. Google Drive is not HIPAA compliant. So by itself, that worries me. You know, if a medical practitioner cannot use Google Drive to store patient records, then I think your tax practitioner should not be using Google Drive to store your records. And if your tax person says, email me your data, you might want to seek a new tax person, or at least have a conversation with them about what they do to protect you. This information is not widely distributed, and I think people underestimate the risks and the dangers. And if you're, you know, handling people's private data, boy, you really got to do a better job. You got to really think about this stuff. 8888, ask Leo. Back to our more traditional concerns: broken computers and what phone to buy. Joshua in Chino, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Joshua.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? You got a Blu-ray player, huh?
Yeah, you gave me the recommendation. I wanted to tell you very much thank you because it worked out really well.
Tell me what you did and how it's working.
Okay, well, we talked about back in September when it was really hot and I was needing a new multi-regional player.
Yes.
Okay, we looked on, you kind of Googled something and said try Samsung and it was Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Has PAL on it, and it also does 3D, and it also had other capabilities of burn type of recording.
Oh, nice.
So I was actually testing this out since September till now with different people bringing their DVDs, putting it on, and it was very supportive to know that the unit can actually even do well with other type of recordings.
Fantastic. Tell me what it is. Tell me which one it is so I can make a note.
Okay, Samsung J, as in Joshua, 5900.
The J5900. All right. Well, yeah, I'm going to keep that in my my little list of things to recommend. It sounds like you're very happy with it. How much was it?
About $200.
Wow, that's amazing. And it plays back high def Blu-ray discs and
right.
And does all that other stuff. Region encoding is a big issue because, of course, you can buy a disc. You know, you can be traveling, buy a disc in Japan, take it home, and it won't play on your Blu-ray player.
It's and also 4K as well. So, you know, nice. That was... So, I mean, I was very happy with it because when we looked at one that was just one level below it, and I thought, well, for a few more dollars, why not, right? So I put it on, and it worked out really well. So thank you so much for that.
My pleasure. Thank you for calling and letting me know. It worked for you, Joshua. Appreciate it. Well, sometimes I, you know, make a recommendation and I never find out if it was a good idea. I'm glad it was. Hans in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Hans.
Good afternoon, Leo. How are you, sir?
I am fine. How are you?
Excellent. I have a smaller problem. Maybe it's big, but for you, it will be very small. And I have a quick question regarding my business that I have. That they can provide the high-speed internet.
Okay.
And I asked around, and they said that if you could use a hotspot, but the problem is in a hotspot, you know, sometimes you have you're limited. Sometimes you can get a megabyte.
You have a business that you don't get good internet where you are. Is that what's going on?
That is correct. And my location that I have, it's in San Bernardino, to be exact.
Okay.
The service provider used to be Verizon. Now they switched up to they changed it to the Frontier, and the company has a horrible service, unfortunately.
I know.
And they're just providing a 1.5 megabyte.
Oh!
And my entire life POS system.
And they don't offer a business class cable service?
Forget about it, that one, my friend.
That's too bad. That's very disappointing.
And not to mention we're paying $85 just for that.
For a megabyte and a megabit and a half, you're paying $85?
$85, honestly, on that one. And it's getting to the point that you're getting hurt. And the money's not the issue over here, the belt, but the problem is the service that they're providing is extremely low, and we can't even run the POS system with that.
That's very disappointing. Service.
And not to mention, we have the civilian cameras in the business too, as well. So we want to connect to that too, as well. And by taking some from that too, as well, it makes it much more difficult to conduct the business.
So there should be in your area a number of other companies whose names you won't recognize, that offer high speed internet service in your area. Some of them may even offer fiber in your area.
Sure, but because my location is located inside of the mall, the business, so what they did is...
You're stuck with the mall. I get it.
That is correct. You're kind of stuck with that territory. So it used to be for the Verizon.
This is the biggest scam out there. It happens in apartment buildings, too. These companies go to the apartment building or the mall owner, and they make a deal with them. And part of the deal is no one else can offer service to the people who live in that apartment building or have stores in that mall. You're stuck with the lousy deal the mall owner made.
But the problem is you don't even have a choice, Nate. We have some other choice, and this time...
There is no choice because the mall owner made a deal, and he's probably making money off of it as well. And that's terrible performance. Now, yeah, you could look at a wireless solution, but how are you deep within the mall?
Not too deep, to be honest, and we're close to the street areas.
Okay.
But according to what they're explaining is we're too far from the box in order to provide much better service for that. But I asked, I think that was just an excuse for them, and I asked several other my neighbor in the mall, so they said they're getting the same service too as well. The max that they've seen it in the mall and some of the neighbors.
Unbelievable. And, you know, this is so important because your credit cards, if you're going to take credit cards, all of this stuff needs to have high-speed internet access.
That is correct.
It's not like you're just watching Netflix in there.
The landline.
Yeah. Your landline, too. That's right. In many cases, we have VoIP services.
You don't know what to do. It's kind of this kind of a situation right now with this, but it used to be earlier this year it was fine, and now it got worse.
Yeah, I think what you need to do is a tenant revolt. You need to all go to the landlord and say, you need to get this fixed. This is not acceptable. It's the 21st century. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The only choice you have at this point would be a wireless, solution. You could probably do something with cellular LTE that would certainly be faster. What kind of, when you're in the store, how's your cell phone look? Do you get 4 bars, 5 bars?
Yeah, the cell phone is functioning perfectly fine. The cell phone is
do you know, have you looked at your bill to see how much data you use each month? Do you know how much data you use?
I didn't try, but since the mall hours are really long hours, so technically we open 7 days, so I'm concerned about...
Yeah, because one of the problems, if you go to Verizon, which would probably be their best bet, and get one of their little boxes that give you internet access wirelessly, there will be some caps, bandwidth caps on that. But I would bet you Verizon, and if you can use Verizon and negotiate with AT&T and others as well, saying, well, I'm getting this deal from Verizon. What are you going to do for me? They want your business. I think that's probably the best solution. Let me just see what business kind of business plans they offer.
And the ones that I have in my location is very weak. The internet service that they're providing, I guess they have some issues. That's what I was thinking to have. The second thought is the solution is to have the hotspot, but I don't know whether if we're limited on that.
Well, Verizon offers wireless business solutions. So that will be, you'll get a box. It will, as long as you can get good LTE in your store, you should have no problems. And LTE should give you anywhere from 15 to 100 megabits of bandwidth. And yeah, you want to look at what kind of limits there are. But because it's for business, they're gonna understand that. I would call a Verizon rep and say, look, here's the situation. What can you do for me? And make sure that you can say you can try it for a week or two. They'll give you a jet pack, which is kind of a Wi-Fi access point that anything in the store can use, except that it's getting its internet not from the wire, but from LTE. And and I think that they're going to have some good solutions for you, designed for business, because you're not alone. This is fairly common. And by the way, the other thing you can do is leverage all the other people in the mall who are pissed off and say, I could bring you to 15 new customers if you can give me a good deal or give us a good package deal.
That's not a bad idea, actually, I think. this would be a good idea.
Yeah. Why not? They have a lot of leeway to negotiate with you. It's not like buying cell phone service as an individual. You know they want your business service. That's good. That's gold to them.
Yeah, certainly. But if they're limited for that, and obviously,
I don't know if they. I mean, they understand what you that you need more than just a 5 gigabytes a month. I'm pretty sure they offer you, whether it's unlimited or you pay per tiers or whatever. But I don't think this is a difficult thing to solve. I think you're going to want to use LTE. And because you're in a big area, San Bernardino is going to be well served by LTE. And you can always go to AT&T and other carriers and see what they offer.
I'll give a shot on that. Can I ask one more quick question?
Sure.
Please? Second question is I lost my phone when I was traveling to Europe.
Oh, no.
I came back again and I... asked the Apple store. I use an iPhone. And I asked the Apple stores maybe if they could retrieve our contact phone numbers and all that things, because I forgot my
iCloud. Only if you backed up to iCloud. It's the only way they could do it.
I see. They can't do any other
way. No, they have no other way of getting it. Sorry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. TechGuyLabs.com, the website. Don't forget. Let's see. Marco is in, the Madeira Islands in Portugal. Hi, Marco.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
Wonderful to talk to you. Have we talked before?
Yes, we have spoken a few weeks ago.
I thought so, because I remember talking to you about Madeira.
You said you were coming here next year.
I can't wait. Yeah. So what can I do for you?
I wanted to ask you if you know of... you are aware of an email client for iOS that allows to display the emails in plain text?
Yes, I do. For iOS. I know for Apple. Let me think for iOS. You don't want to see HTML. It's dangerous. You're right not to want to see HTML.
Yes, exactly.
The problem is that Apple's mail and every other mainstream mail client panders to users, because the users, I want graphics, I want pictures. The problem with it is that when you are looking at HTML email, you're basically looking at a web page, and that can be dangerous. Now, good email clients, like Apple's Mail, will do things like not load images, which helps protect you, but it's always a little bit risky to run email in HTML mode. Let me think if there's any email for HTML for iOS that lets you do just plain text. So I know there is for the Mac, for almost every operating system. And by the way, that's what I use. I don't use any HTML email clients.
Yes, Thunderbird for that on the computer.
I wonder if Boxer is a very funky old enterprise email client. Wonder if they still are around for iOS and if they do non-HTML. That's a, you know what, I don't know off the top of my head the answer to this. I love the idea. Maybe somebody who's listening can
around, but I haven't been able to find anything.
Really? Okay.
Not Outlook, not mail, not anything.
Really? That's disappointing.
There is something I don't know. I haven't really looked.
Well, I think you might be right, mostly because people just assume that everybody wants graphics, and if you made an email client that didn't do, you know, pictures and pretty fonts and, you know, dancing bears, people go, I don't want that. I don't like that. I'm just looking. Boxer is one of the more old-fashioned email clients for iOS, and it has lots of features. And I'm just checking to see if it – I don't know if it has non-HTML email. That's the problem, is you'd have to install these, and they probably all have HTML by default. You know, that's an interesting question. I don't know the answer, but we're going to find it for you. So keep listening. And perhaps if we don't get it in the show before the end of the show in the next 40 minutes, somebody will kindly put it in our website, techguylabs.com. We're looking for an email client for iOS that can be set to turn everything into plain text, no HTML.
Can I ask another quick question?
Sure.
Do you know if WhatsApp scans the photos and videos somebody sends to you for virus? They check the multimedia file.
If you're on iOS, you're probably okay, because there's no real viruses in mobile. You're talking about desktop, though?
Yes, both. I'm using iOS, but I just wanted to know.
Don't worry about iOS. You don't have to worry about virus scanning in iOS. For your desktop, if you're on a Mac, I wouldn't worry about it. Apple actually builds in some pretty strong anti-malware features. They're kind of invisible. I think you're probably all right in any modern operating system. I don't really recommend antiviruses for Android. Google also builds that into Android. They call it Android Protect now, or Google Protect now, and it scans every app looking for malware and that kind of thing. I think you're safe on iOS. I don't know of any successful malware propagation on iOS. I wouldn't worry about it. And so. Don't worry about it, in other words. I think one of the reasons nothing exists like that is because Apple doesn't do it. If Apple doesn't do it, then no one else can do it. It's the kind of thing Apple would not allow. But I do. And the other thing I guess we should mention is, don't forget, you can turn off image rendering in iOS Mail. That's probably your best bet if you can't find a plain text.
Yes, I was able to turn off the image.
Yeah, that's a good start. Yeah. I completely agree with you. The problem is that everybody now uses HTML mail, and you know, if you get an email from your bank, you would think you'd want that to be secure, but no, it's going to be in HTML because people expect, you know, they want to see the bank logo and all the design features and all of that. I agree with you. I'm actually really glad to hear there's somebody else besides me who doesn't like HTML-based email. It's a real security flaw, a real security hazard. However, on iOS, that's pretty well locked down. I wouldn't worry too much on iOS, Marco. Hey, it's great to hear from you. Put a cask of Madeira aside for me, will you?
Okay.
Have a great day. Thank you, Marco.
Have a nice day.
You
bye.
Too. Take care. That's interesting. I use on the Mac side, I use MailMate, which can be used in plain text mode, and I send almost all my emails plain text, except when I send you an email from iOS, you're going to get an HTML email because it's just kind of how it happens. Clause is very good. Archandra is reminding me. I wish there were a clause for iOS. Clause is the email program I use on Windows and Linux. Claws. Very nice. And it also will block HTML and emails. The problem is you get a lot of emails that are kind of unreadable because they just depend on all those graphical elements. We're swimming upstream, Marco. Diana, Seattle, Washington, you're next. Hi, Diana. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Goodness, I can't believe I'm talking to you.
Oh, my goodness, you're on the air. Oh, this is so exciting.
Oh, yeah. So my problem is I bought a new 7-inch Huawei tablet, and I currently have my older tablet is a Samsung 8-inch, and I just decided to get the 7-inch because a smaller screen and better for.
I like 7 inches. I know. I wish more people made 7-inch tablets. I think they're really
So I really like this Huawei MediaPad. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
But so the issue I'm having is I've been trying to figure out how to not exactly transfer one game to one tablet or the other, but to play to be able to play
on both.
The same game on both tablets.
Like if you have Words with Friends, for instance, even if you play on iOS and Android, you log into your Words with Friends accounts, it's the same games. You don't want to have to play one game on one operating system and one on the other. Unfortunately, that is a feature of the game. You can't do it yourself. Yeah. So if the game doesn't do it, you can't do it. Google has a system, the Google Play Games app. Make sure yours is...
Right, which I did.
You have those installed. Yeah. But the app has to take advantage of it.
Okay.
So if the app doesn't do that, there's no way. See if there's a way to log into the app or make sure that the app is logging into Google Play Games. Because generally speaking, if it does that, either you create an account with Electronic Arts, whoever made the app, or you create an account with Google Play Games. Generally, the reason for that is to preserve saved games across platforms. But again, they have to implement it. You can't do it on your own. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I know what you're thinking. Like, if I could only copy that folder where the game is over to the other device, but no. They would get out of sync right away because as soon as you used it, it would change, but there's no mechanism for it to be propagated to the other device. It has to be built in. Okay. What game?
Okay. I play Scrabble and Yahtzee, and I have a couple of slot machine apps. Yeah. And I'm like at level 1500.
It's frustrating. I know.
So I downloaded it on the new
You have
the
to
new,
start all over.
Device, and it's right at the beginning. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, that's the developer. They just didn't build that in. If I play Words with Friends, which of course is Scrabble, and they decided to build that in, as they should, because I'm playing a game with my mom. I don't want to have to play a new game on every different device. I want to be able to play the same game. Right.
Right.
So, yeah, if those games don't implement it, then you're just out of luck.
So it's up to them.
They have to. Okay. If they don't build in a way to not only – it has to be able to save the game state, but then propagate the game state, copy it either using Google Play Games or an account with that company. But do look. Make sure that you've – sometimes they don't make it obvious. So look in the settings, and sometimes there's a checkbox that says use Google Play Games. Sometimes there's a sign into your account. That's what they need. They need some central server that they copy the data to, right?
Yeah. I will look into that further. But thank you for.
I'm sorry.
I know it's kind of a pain in the neck, but anyway, start at the beginning.
Sometimes I have to be the bearer of bad tidings. Contact the app. It's a mistake. It's really kind of they kind of blew it, frankly. But sometimes they just go, well, why would you want to do that? Or maybe better yet, let's get her to start a whole nother game on another machine.
Right. Yeah. Start at the
That's it.
That's the ticket. No, I don't want to do that. three years to get up to level 1500.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah,
that is a failing of the game. That's not good. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure. All right. Thanks for calling. All right.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, I love these new jobbers. These are so awesome. These are called, what are they called? I got to look it up. Because they have an accompanying app. So it's so cool. Jabra Sport Life, that's the name of the app. Jabra Elites, I guess. So the idea is you've got to, they come with three different sizes and two different types of tips and three different sizes of inserts. So you've got to try all the different ones. And then they make you put them in and see if they can measure your heart rate. But you also want to optimize for sound. And they're just, the sound is great, but they also do all of this workout stuff, which is so cool. I got to do the resting heart rate test, but you can do different training plans. This would be great for runners particularly. And it'll coach you and everything. Find my headphones. They're right here. Here they are. Oh, I can. This is what Apple and Google should have done. These are incredible headphones. I can play a sound from my headphones. I wonder if that'll work. Oh, yeah. I can hear it. That's cool. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, back to the phones at 8888 Ask Leo. Isaac, Clinton, Mississippi. Hi, Isaac.
Hello.
Come on over to the phone. What can I do for you today?
All right, so I got a question.
Been yes, sir.
Trying to get through to you for a while. It never could happen, so I'm glad I
didn't
get passed out.
Woohoo!
All right, so I got a pretty decent little home theater I've been working on for a while. I got the Sony 4K HDR 10, yada, yada. Long
nice.
Story short, I have a little Blu-ray collection that I've been working on, and now 4K is now the new norm.
Oh, man!
Right, exactly. So is the difference in quality from a 4K Blu-ray as opposed to a normal Blu-ray worth spending the money?
Yeah.
On a 4K screen anyway.
Yeah, it really looks good. Here's what I would suggest. You've got really good quality. I mean, Blu-ray HD is fabulous, right? But it's only 1,080 lines from top to bottom. Now you have 2,060 lines, and even more important, high dynamic range. Does your TV set do HDR?
It does.
And your Blu-ray player does HDR?
Well, yeah, it's on the PS4 Pro.
It does. Actually, does the PS4 Pro do HDR? I'm sure it does.
Yeah, well, the base PS4 does it as well.
I hope so. If it does.
I don't know if. Go ahead.
So what I would do is don't replace the old movies yet. But the next time you see a movie that you want in 4K HDR, get it. And there's some really gorgeous movies. Mad Max, the new Mad Max was just gorgeous looking. I bought a few, and just to verify it, you know, the new Blade Runner 2049, when it comes out on UHD HDR, that'll be a good example because that is a very murky, dark movie. And generally, at least some, well, I bought just now, I bought Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. I bought the UHD version, which is twice as much as the HD version.
Wow.
I know. That's frustrating. But it came with three discs, which I thought was interesting. The 4K UHD disc, but also a standard Blu-ray and a 3D Blu-ray. So if you can find one that has, if you can find one that has the two different discs, the 4K and the UHD and the HD, and then you can compare them. And then you'll be the judge of, gee, do I like this movie enough that I want to get the new version?
Yeah, well, the only set that I know for sure I would fork up the money for a 4K set would be Star Wars.
Oh, you don't have the TV set yet, or you do?
No, I do.
Oh, you're just talking about upgrading the discs, right?
Right. Well,
yeah.
I don't think any of the old format Blu-rays are even HDR implemented. I don't think there's any that.
No, they're not. You have to get the 4K to get the HDR. Yeah. Yes, you're right. So that's exactly right. If it's, you know, a movie that you cherish, like Star, if they ever put out Star Wars 4K HDR.
Oh, Lord.
That's exactly right, because it'll be a lot of movies. It'll be very expensive, and I'm sure Disney will do it. The only one they can't do, by the way, is the first one. They didn't own the rights to that one.
Really?
Yeah. But you can get all the rest of them.
Four?
I don't know. I guess I don't. I think 20th Century Fox retained the rights to Episode 4. And all the rest reverted to Lucas. And so I know there's some sort of rights issue going on there. However, there are certain movies that are just so important and iconic that if you can get them in UHD HDR, I would. But you're going to first of all have to be the judge. So, for instance, the one thing I've done that with, and I mentioned this with Scott Wilkinson earlier, was that fabulous BBC series Planet Earth. When I first got an HD TV and a Blu-ray player, I bought the Blu-ray set of those, and they were mind-boggling. And I would bring everybody over and I'd say, you got to see this. It's incredible. And then when I got the 4K set and the 4K player, I upgraded. It's all new footage. They went out and they shot all new footage with red cameras. And it is, the difference is spectacular. So I will tell you that to my eyes, it is worth it. But you're going to have to decide that for yourself, because we're talking a fairly hefty cost on these UHD discs.
They're usually about $40.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was Billy Lynn, I think it was $22 for the HD version and $44 for the UHD version.
Wow.
So you really have to think about it.
You're going to be very picky and
yeah, I mean I think it's got to be a movie that you cherish.
Yeah.
You know, I've bought
All right.
There's some movies that I've bought many times. Right? It's like the Beatles. How many versions of Beatles albums have I bought, going back to vinyl and then now to the latest remastered super duper high quality Sgt. Pepper? Oh, yeah. Right? I bought it 8 times or something. But for something you really care about, I think it is worth it. It does look mind-bogglingly better. So get one of the newer ones. If you can find one that comes with both Blu-ray and UHD, you can then do your own comparison and see whether it's worth it. I think it is. I think especially HDR. I don't think the 4K resolution is as big a deal as the high dynamic range. It just really looks good.
All right.
Well, okay.
Mr. Tech Guy.
Somebody's saying
research.
You could also check the reviews. You know, Scott Wilkinson's site, avsforum.com, has some really good reviews about the quality of the discs. Blue-ray.com, Marsworm in the chat room is saying, is another place where you can review not just the movie itself, but the quality of the master. And if you can get one that's well mastered in HDR, I'll tell you, here's an example. I bought, it wasn't a great movie, Russell Crowe in Master and Commander. And the disc is interesting. Scott uses it because it starts with a very dark night scene. It's a naval battle in the early 1800s. And it's very dark. And he uses it to kind of look at the quality of the mastering and the quality of the compression. That I have that in Blu-ray HD. And if they started to offer a UHD version of it, I'd probably get it. Not because it's the greatest movie ever, but because it's a very good demonstration of the difference. It would be, anyway, of the difference between standard dynamic range and high dynamic range. This, to me, is the most important change in home theater since we went to HD. So HD and UHD, you're talking about the number of dots, right? HD has 1,080 lines from top to bottom. UHD is twice that. It's 2,160 lines from top to bottom. You get a sufficient distance from the screen that you're not seeing the pixels, the dots. It's not a huge difference. Maybe it's a little crisper. Maybe. High dynamic range expands the range, the distance between the blackest blacks and the whitest whites. That expanded distance, expanded dynamic range, makes it more realistic, makes it more dramatic, makes it richer. It's hard to describe, but I think that is the single biggest improvement in video since high def. Unfortunately, in order to get that, you have to have a 4K UHD HDR compatible TV and player. And then the discs, they have to be upgraded too. And then I guess it would make a difference. For instance, episode 4, the very first Star Wars, I don't know if that would make a difference to get an HDR version of it. I don't know. Do they have the masters? Do they have the original? And how well could they digitize that original film? All of that would make a big difference and determine perhaps whether it's worth it. But when you read the reviews, occasionally they'll say, this is an amazing master. This is one to get. And I'm going to guess, it's not out yet, but I'm going to guess that that new Blade Runner 2049, that's going to look pretty good on HDR. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the Gizwiz next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How do you like your love? I like it straight, served with a side of giz whiz. Leo Laporte. It does. I never thought of that. Your nickname, Dick DiBartolo, is here, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and our gizmo wizard, we call him the Giz Whiz, does sound a little bit like Cheese Whiz. It sounds like a snack treat.
It does.
Yeah.
It can be. A lot of people say my reports are cheesy, so it just all
That's a good point.
It fits in.
You just did pet gadgets on World News Now, right?
Yes, and I picked out the two weirdest ones. One I think you're going to love. Okay. I think it is so clever. It's called Pistachios. And I thought, wait a minute, dogs aren't supposed to eat nuts. What pistachio? So it turns out it's a play on pill and stash as in hide.
Oh.
And they're little flavored capsules. Charlie loves these.
See, it's really hard to get dogs to eat their meds, to take their meds.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So Charlie's crazy about the cranberry turkey ones. And they pop. They
I might
open
like
up.
Those.
Yeah, Dennis is, we're having them for dinner. So you pop them open and you drop the pill in, and then it has this little, they say, sealing lid that doesn't let the dog even smell medication. Oh. So you give the dog one first, just with nothing in it.
It looks like a treat.
Yes, exactly. And then the second one has the pill, and they eat that, and then the pill's gone.
Oh,
and they said it's
so
very
smart.
It's very, and you get 32 of them. It's like $12.98 for, and they come in two sizes, big and small, depending on what kind of pill you're putting inside it.
This is a good idea. Pistachio.
You're right. Now, the weird one is from
a vet. That wasn't the weird one? Okay.
No. Oh, no, that's the clever one. This is the no-ball cat feeder. Developed by a vet who says cats like to hunt for their food.
That's true. We know that for sure. Yeah.
Okay. So it's five little mice, designed mice, that you put food in and hide. They're dry food in it.
Oh.
And then, so when they're bored and hungry, they can run around the house. And when they knock the mouse around, there are little holes in it. The treat starts spilling out.
This is clever.
Oh, okay, okay. And it comes with the mouse trainer.
Okay. Yeah.
So the mouse trainer is just the insert with a lot of holes in it, so that when the cat touches it in any way, they get fed. And they go, oh, these things are great. They give food.
Is this for a treat, or is this like how you would get fed?
This is how you would feed them their dry food dinner. The vet said don't make their entire dinner all the time dry food, but they should have some moist food too.
They also have, for the holidays, Rudolph.
I didn't see that.
Yes, a little sleigh, a little elf.
Yeah, because you know the cat's going to go, you know, this is the holidays. I'm not playing with the regular mouse. Do you have nothing decorated?
It's true, though. In fact, if you don't give cats a way to hunt, they will hunt other things, and I don't like that at all. So
yeah, that's what you said. It can say,
save birds.
Them.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. There you go. All right, well, then you like them both.
It's from Doc and Phoebe's Cat Company.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
Doc and Phoebe.
Indoor hunting feeders.
And you know how I found the website? Not by searching for it, because that didn't work. I went to gizwiz.biz. That's Sticky D's fabulous website. You click the link. The Gizwiz visits the tech guy, and then he's got notes there and links and where to buy all of the things he mentions. Not only this show, but other shows like World News Now. And you can also play his What the Heck Is It contest. And I got a very special treat when I had lunch with Dick and Dennis this week. You gave me the, and I can't show it. I won't show it. The new Mad Magazine.
You know what? You can today.
Oh, I can? Oh.
Yesterday, Huffington Post published
the
cover.
They leaked
it. Yeah.
Now, is this the last one that's going to be made in New York?
It's the last one that the New York staff will see. We are making one more issue to give the staff in California time to get together. We're putting the issue together before the office closes, but it will be printed and sent to California.
So this is a kind of a special red letter
it's a very
magazine,
special.
And Dick autographs it, which is very nice. You gave us one for our son. I'm thrilled. And he will be too when he gets it for Christmas. I'm going to say I paid $1,000 for it.
Okay, yeah, tell him. Yeah,
yeah, it's going to be very exciting. GizWizDub is the way you would do it. Is the What the Heck Is It contest? You click that link and you're going to see a close up of a strange gizmo or gadget. There are 12 autographed Mad magazines for the right answer. If you get more than 12, you'll have a drawing, and there are 24 for the cleverest wrong answer. It's all there at GizWiz.biz.
And it runs for 2 more weeks.
2 more weeks, and that's it. That's it. Then the mailroom moves. Dick is going to have to get something else to send you.
My heart breaks with my heart.
By the way, if they ever sell the jackets, was it John Vaccaro made those? The Mad Mad.
John Vaccaro made that as a going away gift for us.
It says Mad New York. They're baseball jackets.
Yeah, and of course, I'll actually put pictures online.
They're
yeah.
great. They're really Dick was wearing it, and I almost mugged you, to be honest.
Well, Lisa tried first, but she was easier to take down.
Dick will continue to write for Mad Magazine, moving out to L.A., but Dick will be in every issue because he's been for the last years, and I'm glad of that. You're on the back cover of this newest Mad Magazine that'll be coming
yes,
out.
Sir.
Thank you, Dickie D. Giz,
okay, thank you, buddy.
Biz. That's the website, GizWiz.biz, or his podcast, GizWiz.tv. I tried to give – this is how dedicated Dick is – I had extra Broadway show tickets. Tried to give them to Dick.
I was so upset, but
he couldn't go because he had to do the podcast. That's how dedicated he is.
Yeah, you're thank a you.
True trooper. Back to the final call for today. Adam in Pittsburgh, PA. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Leo.
How are you?
Hey. Oh, I'm okay. So I stopped using Chrome. I switched back to Firefox recently.
I know. The new Firefox is 57 Quantum is fantastic. Very fast.
So much faster.
Yeah.
But, you know, I own a Chromecast, and I love it, and I use it pretty often. So now I've just got Firefox and Chrome both open.
You want to cast from your browser?
It's from Firefox, if there's a way.
Yeah, I don't know of a way to do that. That's interesting. Of course, Google builds it into Chrome. There's a cast option right there in the menu. And what that does, for people who don't know, is it puts your browser up on your big screen TV, which means that anything that you can display in the browser, including movies or whatever, can be displayed on your big screen TV. If you make it full screen, it's awesome. You know what somebody's going to have to do, and I don't know if it's even possible, a Firefox extension for Chromecast. I don't know of one. Be my guess that, you know, Google's always said Chromecast is, you know, open standard. But I think there's enough proprietary stuff in there that might be hard to do. I don't know. It's a good question. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.